close encounters of the possession kind as you read this volume. Be prepared to meet otherworldly beings in a form never before imagined. There are alien colonists, alien scientists, alien castaways, alien/human hybrids, and many others. There are many non-physical, unearthly beings who impose mind control at a whole new level, revealing a sinister side of the UFO phenomenon previously regarded as absurd and only hinted at in other books. In acknowledgement of his pioneering exploration of science and spirit in his groundbreaking work, Spirit Releasement Therapy, a Technique Manual, Drive, William J. Baldwin was honored with the 1994 Franklin Lower Memorial Award by the International Association for New Science in Fort Collins, Colorado. He has received other awards for lifetime achievement and contribution to the transpersonal field in the tradition of bridging mind, body, and spirit. Now Drive, Baldwin further expands his fascinating explorations into consciousness and documents what many hundreds of clients have discovered in clinical session. CVL, Close Encounters of the Possession Kind catapults the reader into the many-layered realms of human consciousness and experience, revealing unwanted intrusions by alien others. This kind of ET/UFO encounter appears to be non-physical yet every bit as intrusive as the well-known abduction scenario. Addressing the heart of the matter, CVL illuminates a path for overcoming fear and embracing the fresh, eternal, indestructible light of human freedom. CVI Close Encounters of the Possession Kind by William J. Baldwin, Ph.D. CVI Close Encounters of the Possession Kind by William J. Baldwin, Ph.D. Also by Drive, William Baldwin Spirit Releasement Therapy, a Technique Manual Past Life Therapy, a Training Manual from My Heart to Yours, a Transformational Guide to Unlocking the Power of Love, co-authored with Reverend Judith A. Baldwin. Copyright 1999. Center for Human Relations. All rights reserved. No part of this book may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, including recording, photocopying, or by any information storage and retrieval system, for public or private use without prior written permission from the author, except for brief excerpts used for publicity purposes. The term Spirit Releasement Therapy was trademarked in 1993 by the Center for Human Relations. For convenience and clarity, the superscript registration mark will not be used extensively in the text of this book. For information, address: Center for Human Relations, P.O. Box 4061, Enterprise, Florida 32725. Headline Books, Inc., P.O. Box 52, Terre, Alberta, West Virginia 26764. ISBN 0929915224. Library of Congress number 98-75,600. Close Encounters of the Possession Kind, Interference from the Extraterrestrials Among Us by William J. Baldwin, Ph.D. Headline Books, Inc., Terra Alta, West Virginia. Dedication. This work is dedicated to life in all its forms on this planet and elsewhere. The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mystery. It is the source of all true art and science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand rapt in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. Albert Einstein. Table of Contents. Forward. 8. Preface. 9. Acknowledgements. 12. Introduction. 13. Chapter 1. Possession and the Extraterrestrials Among Us. 19. Chapter 2. Regression Therapy. 24. Chapter 3. Spirit Releasement Therapy. 37. Chapter 4. UFOs and Alien Abduction. 54. Chapter 5. The Hybrids. 67. Chapter 6. Close Encounters of the Possession Kind. 70. Chapter 7. The Alien Colonists. 75. Chapter 8. The Alien Scientists. 80. Chapter 9. Bargaining with the Forces of Darkness. 88. Chapter 10. Spirit Releasement Therapy and the DFES. 92. Chapter 11. Mind Power. Mind Control. 97. Chapter 12. Armageddon or Cosmic Chess. 102. Epilogue. 107. Appendix. 108. Bibliography. 109. Notes. 115. Index. 125. Savvy. Forward Drive. William Baldwin's book, CVI, Close Encounters of the Possession Kind, systematically shows the reader the various kinds of spirit attachments, including dark force entities and earthbound lost souls. However, he goes beyond what has been described before by clearly examining case histories that involved attachments, or takeovers, by aliens or extraterrestrials. Not only that, he demonstrates how some attachments by ETs have been manipulated by dark forces intervention. Besides showing the reader what has happened, he demonstrates the effectiveness of his releasement therapies in eliminating any of, and all of, these types of attachments. His stunning case histories, showing him at work in resolving those debilitating conditions, gives the reader not only information, but hope, the knowledge that one does not have to be burdened by these, at times life-threatening, intrusions. His book is also a manual for any mental health worker open-minded enough to put the client's welfare above previously accepted belief systems or what is currently accepted as conventional therapy. He shows that these conditions do, indeed, happen, and, best of all, they can be resolved in a loving, human, and effective way. Drive, Baldwin's work is another of his contributions to the understanding and relief of human suffering. Bravo, Drive, Baldwin, Edith Fiore, Ph.D. Close Encounters of the Possession Kind Preface. Sightings of Unidentified Flying Objects, or UFOs, and involuntary abductions by aliens have been widely reported over the last 5 decades in countries around the world. Investigators have uncovered reports of similar visitations that occurred tens, hundreds, even thousands of years ago. One, this is not a new happening. Through my clinical experience with thousands of clients, I have come to accept not only the existence of discarnate entities and energies, and their effects on living people, but also the possibility that ETs, extraterrestrials, exist, at least in some form. Not in the way I read about in volumes of science fiction or books on UFOs and alien abductions, but in a form that I can communicate with, even though I can't see them. They have impact on our reality and they can affect individual human beings, usually with unfavorable results, through the voices of the clients in altered states of consciousness. These alien beings reveal their purposes for being here. They describe their homeworld civilizations, and many express the desire to go home. In some cases, the ET commandant on a nearby spacecraft, and even the leader of the ruling High Council on the homeworld, will speak through the voice of the client. The ETs offer many reasons for their presence here. Many are here to gather data and information on human life forms. They are technicians and scientists. There seems to be some kind of long-term genetic experimentation and manipulation in progress. Some ETs may be able to help troubled humans. A few apparently have the ability to heal physical ailments. Some people claim to have been spiritually transformed as the result of an abduction and interaction with aliens. In other cases, the ETs announce they are here to take control, to simply take over the human race, beginning with our client. They often threaten that we will be next. Such threats clearly indicate DFE, dark force entity, influence. This channeled information could be totally fabricated by the client, consciously or unconsciously. It may be a product of the collective unconscious mind, triggered by a subliminal mass hysteria over an urban myth of alien domination. A more sinister possibility reflects the fears of the conspiracy theorists. The alien abductions may involve elements of our own government who have formed some kind of alliance with ETs, beings from other worlds or other dimensions. Equally repugnant is the possibility that the entire UFO/ET enigma might be nothing less, nor more, than field testing of mind control technology by Earth's own intelligence agencies or military personnel. However, it may be exactly what it appears to be. Actual communication with an alien race. Whatever the case, the information voiced through the clients forms a consistent body of knowledge about the alien beings and their motivations for coming to our planet. Therapists deal with problems and situations which cause discomfort to non-savvy people. Most therapists deal with mundane, temporal conditions, emotional upset, personality imbalance, character deficiency, relationship conflicts and similar issues. Psychiatrists often treat signs and symptoms of mental illness with medication designed to control the symptoms. Few practitioners get involved in spiritual matters, though there is a reluctant but growing acceptance and recognition of religious or spiritual problems in the mental health field. Two UFOs and DEETs are considered by most health professionals as imagination and hallucination. the product of an unbalanced or deranged mind, or outright hoax, and reports of such are not taken seriously. Possession and exorcism are still relegated to the domain of fantasy and hallucination, and not considered worthy of serious consideration. Even most clergy deny and avoid this area. Several states have statutes expressly forbidding a licensed mental health practitioner from being involved in any sort of exorcism procedure. And yet, perhaps millions of people suffer with the effects of non-physical or other dimensional intelligent beings which interfere or connect with them in some way. Human and non-human entities are discovered in altered state sessions, causing many of the problems and conflicts which motivate people to seek professional help. Many of these entities and energies attempt to take over mental and physical control of the host human. Some simply want a place to live, a body to call their own. Other types seek to disrupt or destroy the host. All of these errant beings want something for themselves, regardless of the desires, needs, plans, or spiritual path of the unfortunate host. This is a terrible violation of individual free will. Spirit guides, guardian angels, ascended masters, truly benevolent and highly evolved deities, true spirit teachers and other light beings neither possess nor control humans, and they do not impose their own agendas. This book describes the conflicts which seem to be produced by the intrusive, selfish, opportunistic, sometimes confused, often malevolent entities and energies that interfere with living people. Humans are sovereign beings, and have the right to live without such interference from aliens, entities, other human beings, or government agencies of any kind. Most of the case histories and dialogues in this book have been taken from actual sessions with people in our counseling practice and training courses. The general information is pieced together from the clinical sessions of many clients. There is a consistency in the personal narratives, a pattern which can neither be denied nor ignored. The material is organized here in a coherent picture. The details have not been embellished in any way. My own conclusions, assumptions, and speculations are identified as such. The material in this book is not offered as absolute truth. There is no way to prove the validity of the narratives which come through the client's voices in altered state sessions, nor can these experiences be interpreted in any meaningful way. The subjective experience of several thousands of people is presented here as part of the spectrum of the human condition. Real people have had these experiences. The memories are concealed in the deep unconscious mind. In an altered state of consciousness, also understood as hypnotic trance, they relate to us what in close encounters of the possession kind has happened to them. This is what is being reported. Please read with an open mind. This is Middle America speaking. This could be any of us. It is some of us. Many colleagues in different parts of the country have reported similar AC counts of the alien beings, and intruders with similar missions. Several have contributed cases for this book. Names and identifying details have been changed to ensure the anonymity of the people involved. Minor editing has been done in some descriptions and case transcripts for the sake of clarity only. The purpose of this book is to increase public awareness, not to arouse fear. In clinical practice, we find that more than half our clients are apparently carrying the burden of attached needs and suffering their influence. If this phenomenon is real, it must be investigated and researched thoroughly, documented and made public knowledge. And just consider the possibilities if it turns out to be true. We cannot ignore the mystery of the non-physical reality, the unconscious levels of mind, the imaginal realm, the spiritual levels of being. The deeper levels of consciousness have not been thoroughly explored. This is terra incognita, undiscovered territory, the unknown region. Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, in his autobiography, Memories, Dreams, Reflections, made this statement on the unconscious mind: "3 The years when I was pursuing my inner images were the most important in my life. In them everything essential was decided. It all began then. The later details are only supplements and clarifications of the material that burst forth from the unconscious, and that first swamped me. It was the prima materia for a lifetime's work. It is this uncharted territory which we explore and seek to understand with our limited human intellect. In these pages you will find some of the results of our research. 11 Savi acknowledgments. My clients and the other intelligences which speak through their voices continue to be my most profound teachers. My gratitude is exceeded only by my curiosity at the phenomena which we collectively explore in private sessions. The wellspring of knowledge seems to flow with no sign of running dry. Bob and Kathy Teets, my editors and publishers, also deserve my deep and sincere gratitude for their unending encouragement and support, their gentle course correction on my literary voyage, and their professional skills in this field. Bob's cheerful voice on my phone always stirs renewed enthusiasm for the project when I find myself mired in ennui. Onward and upward, he cheers, and away we go. And to my beloved Judith, my partner in life, in our love, and in the work, I again pledge my eternal love. You always support my earthly endeavors, you are a beacon on my spiritual path, and your flamboyant personality and ebullient sense of humor light up my life when I need it most. Thank you from my heart and my soul. 12 Close Encounters of the Possession Kind Introduction. The government-sponsored program SETI, The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the 4th of May, be focused in the wrong direction. The radio signals are sent into space, and the giant receiving dishes are waiting for return signals from some intelligent beings out there. SETI's work is based on at least two assumptions. 1. Aliens exist in three-dimensional space-time as humans do. 2. They haven't yet arrived on Earth. This could be faulty thinking. If we can draw any conclusions from human experience, then the aliens are already here. Millions of humans may have had encounters with aliens on some kind of spaceship. 5. Many have described the trauma of being abducted against their will, taken aboard the craft or to some unknown location, and subjected to intrusive and often painful physical procedures. 6. During some of these experiences, the abductees claim to recognize humans in military uniforms. Space Brothers have delivered volumes of information to Earth by Channel ING through sensitive persons. They have made several magnanimous promises: to stop nuclear wars, to lift our population off the planet until the predicted cataclysmic Earth changes are over, or to stop Earth changes before they happen. How could we know if they were successful? They have exhorted humans to stop making war on each other and to love each other. Good advice, whatever the source. They have announced certain dates for their arrival and mass landings across the face of the planet. So far, they have not kept these appointments. In my youth, my closest encounter with space beings was through the pages of Astounding Science Fiction magazine. Such authors as Heinlein, Asimov, and Ray Bradbury were my literary adventure heroes. I was still in high school when I read Donald Kehoe's book, The Flying Saucers Are Real, published in 1950. With that book, my thinking turned a corner, my mind opened to the possibility of alien life forms existing somewhere else. Never again was the vastness of space filled with the imaginary creatures of science fiction. According to Kehoe, they were real and they were visiting Earth. Years of college, dental school, and a doctoral program in psychology gave me a firm scientific grounding. I think like a scientist. I am dedicated to rigorous scientific standards of inquiry and objective evidence when considering and examining natural phenomena. The scientific method of inquiry works, at least for the narrow range of physically detectable phenomena. Yet the scientific method tends to be an impregnable, inescapable box which excludes all but hard, physical evidence. Personal exploration of natural phenomena is also valid inquiry. However, subjective accounts are normally not accepted as part of the scientific method of research. Along with my years of education, training, observation, and investigation, I also experienced guided imagery, images suggested by the facilitator, rebirthing, deep, rapid breathing exercise which sometimes stimulates memories of the birth experience, past life regression therapy, uncovering memories of what seem to be prior lifetimes, spirit releasement, removal of interfering conscious energies, and inner child healing, treatment of wounded subpersonalities. I know from these personal experiences what the client is feeling during a session. As a therapist, I am sensitive to human feelings, memories, and experience, no matter how far from consensus reality the stories range, how they differ from accepted norms of the possible/impossible. I have seen and listened to human pain, and it is very real. I have learned that the exploration of human consciousness may uncover anything. Yet much of what is uncovered is rejected by objective science. It seems that a large part of human experience lies outside the parameters of the scientific method. Francis Bacon considered knowledge in itself to be a virtue, to be used to achieve power over nature, leading to longer, healthier, happier human life. Galileo emphasized the value of observation over abstract speculation. He left a legacy of ideas on astronomy that forever changed humankind's notions about the physical universe. Isaac Newton was born in 1642, the year Galileo died. In 1687, Newton published his Principia Mathematica, perhaps the greatest scientific work ever written. It dominated scientific thought for more than 200 years. The Newtonian-Cartesian paradigm is still the reigning model of scientific thinking, devoid of philosophic speculations. Science finally parted company with the spiritual reality between the middle of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, especially in Western civilization. Metaphysical and spiritual phenomena, being unprovable, were relegated to the province of religion. This was a great loss to the human race. Yet people continue to have mystical and spiritual experiences. Can this all be imagination or mass delusion? Deja vu, past life memories, out-of-body experience, near-death experience, possession by other beings or entities, channeling, psychic abilities, precognitive knowledge, UFO contact and abduction, and many other non-scientific events continue to be reported by intelligent, credible people. Seven A few scientists have been courageous enough to study and document such phenomena, then publish their findings in these controversial areas. Some have been ridiculed by the mainstream scientific establishment, those people who won't acknowledge the existence of anything other than the physical universe. Yet awareness of the non-physical universe continues to expand, both in the general population and among some scientific types. Human experience cannot be denied nor explained away. Intelligent curiosity demands serious investigation of the non-physical or spiritual realm. The time is now. The scientific method will never be sufficient to properly and thoroughly explore the richness and depth of human consciousness. The research must include a sense of the spiritual. Subjective human experience cannot be weighed, measured, and exactly duplicated on demand. Yet human experiences are appropriate 14 close encounters of the possession kind data for a complete science. William James, considered by many to be the father of American psychology, urged that science should be based only on experience, and that nothing within the totality of human experience should be excluded from being a potential topic of scientific investigation. In his essays in Radical Empiricism, James defined this term to be radical. An empiricism must neither admit into its construction any element that is not directly experienced, nor exclude from them any element that is directly experienced. 8 In 1981, a year and a half before I left my profession of dentistry, and after more than 10 years of study in metaphysics, parapsychology, and the farther reaches of human consciousness including the near-death, after-death, and out-of-body experiences, past lives, spirit possession and depossession, channeling, and other spiritual teachings, I began conducting a part-time private practice in past life regression therapy, PLT. 9 There were only a few books on the techniques of PLT at the time, written by practicing professionals. Around the world, thousands of therapists of various orientations are now using the techniques of this controversial approach to helping people. The client is guided into an altered state of consciousness, sometimes called hypnotic trance. The emotions surrounding a present life situation can trigger memories of what seem to be events in other lifetimes. In theory, other lifetimes hold the source of most present life problems and conflicts. Memories of traumatic events from former lifetimes can be recalled, processed in the therapy session, and the present life problems ease or disappear. When I first hear something unusual in a regression session, for instance a past life in Atlantis or on a distant planet, the details of an alien abduction or an implant device, or a particular type of attached entity and its effects on the client, I simply note it, without judgment. Many clients have described archetypal scenes such as conflict between the warrior gods of light and the beings of darkness who would take over Earth. When similar descriptions emerge in two or three sessions, I am interested. If many clients report the same experiences, then I accept the experience as part of the human condition within the spiritual reality. To my surprise, after only a few months of doing past life regression sessions, I recognized signs and symptoms of what seemed to be discarnate interference in a growing number of my clients. Like many people, I had assumed this condition to be imaginary, contrived, the result of paranoia and delusional thinking. As a scientific investigator, I observed, recognized, studied this phenomenon, and formed an hypothesis which was not unlike historical descriptions of the condition of spirit possession. 10. From the information gathered during clinical sessions, a map of the spiritual territory slowly unfolded which was similar to age-old descriptions of the spiritual realms. 11. From this working model, I began to develop a rational methodology of treatment for the condition. Turns out the problem is neither imaginary nor delusional. Most people affected aren't aware of the interference until they discover it in a therapy session. The majority of my private clients uncover these unwelcome 15 savvy intrusions. Many of the people who believe and claim they are possessed usually aren't. All through history, this unwanted, involuntary condition has been labeled spirit possession or demon possession. In primitive cultures, spirits were thought to be everywhere, and everything was infused with unseen intelligence. This belief is termed animism. The typical religious literature depicts non-physical entities as demons, the minions of Lucifer, and all spirit possession is considered to be demon possession. The adherence to the philosophy of spiritualism, which began in the middle of the 19th century, believed such entities to be the souls of departed loved ones, returned from the sunny land of the afterdeath realm. 12. Rarely is a living human being taken over and controlled completely by the non-physical entity, though this condition has been reported. A person in this condition would not likely seek a therapy session for the problem. As I observe my clients in clinical session carefully and rationally, it seemed clear that there was definite influence from these apparently separate entities. There are methods of differentiating between parts of self, or subpersonalities, and separate beings of various kinds. I recognized the connection between human and entity as a parasitic condition, and I began using the term spirit attachment instead of spirit possession. My clients were my teachers along the way, as were these apparently attached entities of various kinds. In my curiosity, I asked what must have seemed like endless questions of the entities. They answered through the client's voice. I learned a great deal about the mechanism of spirit attachment, the reasons for attraction and attachment, identification of the many different types of attached entities, and the mental, emotional, and physical effects on the host. It appeared that, aside from superstition, some of the ancient and classical literature on the subject was at least partially valid in a clinical setting, and not merely philosophical and theological beliefs imposed on human thinking. Drawing upon this growing body of empirical knowledge, I developed rational techniques for appropriately releasing these intruders in a way that eliminated any possibility of their return. In ongoing therapy, a person can learn to strengthen the spiritual immune system 13 and begin to learn how to ward off future interference by such opportunistic entities. I briefly tried various exorcism and deliverance techniques drawn from many volumes on the subject. The results were mixed. My own techniques developed empirically, by trial and error, with much correction. What worked, remained. What didn't was discarded. As a parallel to the descriptive term spirit attachment, I coined the designation spirit releasement therapy, SRT, to describe the treatment methods I was evolving. I spent most of my waking hours during 1990 writing the book, Spirit Releasement Therapy, a technique manual, which outlines techniques of past life therapy, recovery of soul fragmentation, and the methodology for clearing attached entities. In the clinical setting, the goal is to help a client find answers within himself or herself that address and relieve personal conflicts or troubling conditions they 16 close encounters of the possession kind may be suffering. Over the years of exploring this phenomena of discarnate interference in clinical practice, the clients have helped me understand that regardless of the scientific rigidity of associated research, the bottom line to them is that the therapy works. In short, whether any, all, or none of what you're about to read is true in the strict scientific sense, it can be replicated in a clinical setting. Replication is one of the basic elements of the scientific method. There is a massive accumulated fear and superstition surrounding the phenomenon of unseen spirits interfering with living humans, largely promulgated through the centuries by the church. In lectures, seminars, workshops, trainings, books and articles, it has been my goal to ease the fear, erase the superstition, to describe rationally a real phenomenon, and increase the public awareness of this very common condition. As my experience expanded in the clinical work and I developed the methodologies of SRT, my knowledge of the spiritual reality also expanded. The techniques are effective in practice and I began to train others in the work. To date, more than 500 people have completed the basic SRT training, and thousands of others have read my technique manual or studied with someone else. Many of these people conduct spirit releasement sessions with similar results. In 1989, I met and married Judith. She is a talented painter, brilliantly creative, and a deeply spiritual human being. She is an excellent instructor and a gifted spiritual counselor. We present professional trainings together and work as co-therapists in clinical sessions. Her presence is a great gift to me personally and professionally. Over the years of clinical experience, I discovered what appeared to be three main types of intrusive, attaching entities: the so-called earthbound spirits, EB, of deceased humans which are bound or stuck in the earth plane and unable or unwilling to move on to the higher realms; the dark force entities, DFE, which includes the classic demon, and aliens or extraterrestrials, ET. This book focuses primarily on the ET and DFE, though there are many other interfering energies. These various intruders seem to cause all manner of mental, emotional, physical, and relationship problems for people. The earthbound human spirits, the EBs, impose human conditions and ailments on the unsuspecting host, such as habits, behaviors, addictions, inappropriate emotions, sexual distortions, and the physical symptoms of illness. The DFEs attempt to block every aspect of human progress, to undermine love in any form or situation, such as self-esteem, personal relationships, and family groups, and to generally cause chaos and disruption at every opportunity. They often claim they are just doing their job. The EATs state that they are from far away, and the light in their universe is a color other than gold and white. 14. They do not impose human problems, and they are often here on a specific scientific mission except for those who are influenced by the DFEs. Whatever the truth might be regarding alien civilizations, humans have always had a curiosity about what's out there. Many have voiced the thought that we humans might have come from out there. The notion of sky people has PEP-17 save paired human thinking, as evident in some early cave drawings and petroglyphs, sacred scriptures, fictional accounts of space travel, and sci-fi movies. 15. Science fiction still holds fascination for many millions of people. Star Trek: The Next Generation was the most successful weekly show in the history of syndicated television. 16. Possession was a common theme in the various Star Trek series. Survival of consciousness beyond physical death and spirit possession have been the subject of numerous popular movies such as Ghost, All of Me, Mixie, and of course, The Exorcist. Possession or control by another being goes against our most basic human and spiritual rights. It is a possibility both terrifying and preposterous. We rail against excessive political or police power. We have laws against intruders who violate our physical person or property. Medical science has developed remedies for many of the microorganisms which invade our bodies and cause disease. We must expand our awareness of the non-physical intruders of all kinds. There are effective methods of dealing with the unseen forces which impose upon us. In this book, you will read about real cases of these close encounters with conscious alien beings, the causes, the effects, and the treatment. There is a reference to such in the Bible, Ephesians 6:12. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. 18. Close encounters of the possession kind CHPTE are one possession and the extraterrestrials among us spirit possession. The possibility of spirit possession, that is, full or partial takeover of a living human by a discarnate or non-physical being, has been recognized, or at least theorized, in every time and in nearly every culture. It seems that a disembodied consciousness, a spirit, a soul, an entity, can join or attach itself and merge fully or partially with the subconscious mind of a living person, exerting some degree of control on the mental functions, emotions, and behavior. An attached entity can produce sensations and symptoms in the physical body of the unsuspecting host. People around the world have described these possessing entities as gods, demons, deities, ancestors, spirit guides, healing spirits of some sort, great teachers, and, more recently, as travelers and teachers from other star systems such as the Pleiades, Arcturus, Orion, Andromeda, Lyra, Vega, or Sirius. Spirit possession is an ancient yet enduring concept, largely denied and ignored by the clergy and mental health professionals in our materialistic Western society. In recent years, however, a growing number of open-minded therapists have begun to notice the condition and accept the possibility of non-physical consciousness and its effects on living people. 17. In clinical psychotherapy sessions, clients describe conflicts, problems, and areas of discomfort in their lives. As they describe painful and unpleasant situations, emotions usually emerge such as anger and frustration, guilt and remorse, even sadness and tears. They usually begin to feel these emotions as sensations in the physical body, nausea, a flush of heat or cold, tightness or tension in muscles, or headache. The descriptions of the problem are often metaphorical phrases, such as, "This makes me sick," or "He's such a pain in the neck," or "It feels like I'm being stabbed in the back," or "It feels like I have a tight band around my head." The client is guided to locate the source of these feelings, both emotional feelings and body sensations, and to recall the first time they felt this way. They are urged to repeat the phrases. They are directed to focus inward and describe what they see, feel, hear. 18. These suggestions usually lead the person into the heart of the problem, the source of the present life conflict, usually a traumatic event, often in a past life setting. If it is a past life of the client, then past life therapy will help ease the problem. However, it may be an attached entity which is causing the problem. There are methods of differentiating between a client's earlier traumatic recall and the memories of an attached entity. There are specific techniques for releasing the different types of attached entities. 19. Earthbound spirits, or EBS, the surviving consciousness of deceased humans. 19. Savi are the most commonly discovered possessing, obsessing, or attaching entities. The emotions and feelings connected with a sudden, traumatic death can hold a spirit to the earth level, usually in the environment in which the person lived and died. Anger, fear, jealousy, resentment, guilt, remorse, even strong ties of love can interfere with the normal transition into the light. The grief of the survivors can hold their loved ones earthbound after the death of the physical body. The newly deceased spirits can follow and sometimes cling to living humans. In session, the client often discovers a different type of non-physical influence, a dark, arrogant, hostile, malevolent, disruptive, destructive entity which claims to be a follower of Lucifer, the Dark One, the Evil One, the Great One, or some other similar name. It claims it has never been alive in its own human body. This description conforms to the classic portrayal of demons in the literature of Christianity and other religions. These we have termed dark force entities, or DFEs. Another form of non-physical entity we often discover with our clients is the alien, the extraterrestrial, or ET, a conscious, sentient being. Typically, they have never been human, though a few claim former incarnations in a human body on Earth. This is not the spirit of a deceased alien. Their normal form seems to be non-physical. 20. They are neither hostile nor belligerent, disruptive nor destructive as the DFEs are. A few assert they are lost or marooned here. Many claim that they come to gather information. Others conduct experiments on humans by influencing emotions in some way and monitoring the results. Some claim to be here to assist human Earth citizens in their spiritual evolution, perhaps even to help our people through the long-predicted catastrophic Earth changes. Some of them are further advanced technologically than humans, some more enlightened in their spiritual evolution. However, most of these aliens who dialogue through the voices of clients are not spiritually aware in the least. As time/space/dimension travelers, they are operating in their own self-interest, without regard for the inhabitants of whatever planet they are exploring and exploiting, and this can wreak havoc with the citizens of Earth. A very few of these intruders claim that they infiltrate living humans in order to gather scientific data or other information, and they have no intention of interfering. They apologize and withdraw when we explain the situation. Other absentists refuse to leave, refuse to talk with us, and consider humans to be nothing more than lab rats to be used in their experiments. This indicates DFE control of the ET, and reveals the more sinister purpose for their presence. Still others arrogantly proclaim they are here to conquer humanity and take over the planet for their own use, and there is nothing anyone can do about it. This element of power and control over others signals the influence of the DFEs. In these cases, the Eats themselves are controlled, even possessed, by the demonic beings. There is no real timetable for such takeover, and some of these aliens assert they have been with their human host for numerous lifetimes. Some of the UFOs and alien beings can be perceived in the physical form, yet can shift vibration and become non-physical, apparently at will, hence invisible to human eyes as well as radar. They can affect humans in a dreadful variety of ways. 20 Close Encounters of the Possession Kind. Carla and her brother Carla was sobbing. She could barely speak through her tears. She was deeply moved as she witnessed the release of an earthbound spirit from an older man in the group who had volunteered to be the subject of the demonstration. In this case, the entity was the spirit of a deceased child who had been with the man since his early married years. It had wanted to be born to this couple. There were very few dry eyes in the place as the little spirit said farewell to its would-have-been parents and moved into the light. Carla was crying so hard she could not see to walk out of the building and drive home. This is not an unusual reaction after observing an emotionally intense spirit releasement session. I offered to help her explore the source of the tears and grief she was feeling. I suspected an attached entity. Her tears finally subsided and an entity was able to speak through Carla's voice. It claimed to be her brother in another existence on another planet in a different solar system. He followed her to this system when she chose to come to the planet Earth to incarnate. He did not want to endure the whole process of becoming a human in his own body as she had done. He had bypassed that step. Now he wanted her to withdraw so he could live through her body, or at least move aside so he could take over. With very little explanation, he realized the harm he was doing to his sister, whom he loved yet wanted to dominate in this chauvinistic manner. As he recounted their life on their home planet in a distant space and time, Carla also recalled the love they had shared there and began to weep again, this time for the joy of that memory and the sadness over the loss. This was, in effect, a dual past life regression, both beings remembering the same prior existence on another planet. He agreed to go and she agreed to release him, though the attraction of love was strong between them. More than a year later, she was thrilled to report major changes in her life as the result of the release of her brother. Janet and the alien probe. Janet was an intuitive healer, adept in her work and in her life. In session she discovered a probe in her third chakra, the solar plexus. She described a thin black cord which, in her perception, led upward through two dimensions. It was connected to a laboratory on a spacecraft. As Janet visualized the location, I called out to the one in charge of the lab. Janet described a sort of humanoid form which actually responded to my questions. She was able to repeat its words. This remote communication link, this type of channeling, has produced some fascinating results over the years. Yes, this alien scientist acknowledged, there was a probe inserted at the level of her solar plexus. It was for the purpose of gathering information on the members of the human species. Drive, Baldwin. How many such members of the human race have you treated this way? Janet. About 3,000. 21 Savi Drive. B. This is a violation of an intelligent species. You have no right to interfere in this way. J. We did not know we were interfering. Drawing from the realms of science fiction, I tried to imagine the organization of such a group of beings. I took a chance and plunged ahead. Drive. B. Cross-connect us with your headquarters. We want to speak with your high command. A few moments passed and Janet straightened in the recliner. Her voice took on a different tone. The manner was almost imperious. High command through Janet. Yes, what is it you want? Drive. B. Your scientists have placed probes in 3,000 human beings without consent. H. C. Yes, they are gathering data. Drive. B. You are gathering data from unwilling subjects. Aren't you aware of the concept of non-interference? There is to be no interference with another sentient species. H. C. Yes, we are aware. We did not mean to interfere, only to gather data. Drive. B. We are a sentient species. We protest this intrusion. H. C. What would you like us to do? Drive. B. We request that you withdraw your probes from every human being on this planet. This was a request, not a demand. I had nothing to enforce such a demand. There was some hesitation, as if there was a discussion being carried on in the background. My skeptical mind asks, if any of this is true, why do they talk to me and why would they be willing to do what I asked? These questions are always with me in altered state sessions. My skepticism remains alive and well. H.C. We will withdraw the probes. We have gathered enough information. Drive. B. Thank you. H.C. You are welcome. Goodbye. Drive. B. Goodbye. The commander was already gone. The alien scientist apologized and gathered his equipment, including the probe, and completed whatever tasks remained. Soon, he was also gone. Janet came out of the altered state as bewildered as I. Were these images valid? Was this nothing more than imagination? Are humans perceived by more highly developed beings as nothing more than biological units, subjects to be randomly probed, examined, and tested, much like lab animals used by Earth scientists? Am I implanting these notions? I don't think so. This was my first encounter with such a situation, and I had no such notions. Many hundreds of clients have since experienced and described such intrusion with probes, implants, and devices for testing, monitoring, and controlling. As a therapist, I must work with whatever information emerges from the client as if it were real. At some level of consciousness, it is real for the client. 22 Close Encounters of the Possession Kind. What's really going on here? Did we come from the stars? Are we about to go back there again? Can we really talk with aliens through the channeling abilities of people in an altered state of consciousness? Why do they listen? Why do they bother to do what we, as therapists, request? But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's back up and begin at the beginning. The experience of birth. 23 Save ECHPTER2 Regression Therapy. Regression therapy has enjoyed renewed interest in the past few decades. The notion that the adult can be affected by childhood events, often traumatic, is not new. Sigmund Freud fostered the theory that repressed memories stimulate and influence adult behavior. Freud claimed that memories of events earlier than age 5 or 6, and certainly infancy, could not be retrieved and expressed adequately because of the limited verbal ability of the child and the infant. 21 However, guided by a well-trained therapist, a person in an altered state of consciousness can uncover and recall repressed and forgotten events from childhood, infancy, birth, the time spent in utero, the experience prior to conception, even other lifetimes. Much of the uncovered material can be verified as valid memories of actual events. 22 But not all. Some of these remembered events may be part of an attached entity's experience. Memory can be less than accurate, and several past events can begin to merge into one memory. Movie scenes, stories, suggestions by friends or therapists, even dreams can become part of the stream of memory. This is termed confabulation of memory. For this reason, events recalled under hypnosis cannot be assumed to be completely real and part of the client's life. In therapy, we strive to ease the emotional impact of recalled events, from this life or another time. We work as if it were true. For the client, it is true at some level. The emotional impact is all too real, and can continue to affect a person, long after the actual event, whatever it might have been. Birth regression. It seems that many people are fixated or stuck in the birth trauma. 23 Human behavior tends to reenact the birth experience. Many people cannot stand to have anything tight around their neck, whether it's a neck tie, turtleneck sweater, or whatever. Most people are very shallow breathers. The urge to breathe and to resist anything that interferes is a most powerful drive for the human. The need for air is the primary hunger. Think about your breathing. How are you breathing right now? With shallow little breaths or a deep, belly-stretching intake of air. Most people find themselves taking very shallow breaths, as if afraid to breathe, or worse, prevented from breathing. During a therapy session, this can often be traced to memories of the actual birth experience. The details of the birth and the entire 9 months of the prenatal period and before are available within the subconscious mind, and this includes the moment of conception. These memories can be uncovered and described through the words of the adult client. 24 There is no barrier to the memory of these events. 25 As the infant passes through the birth canal, the umbilical cord is squeezed. 24 Close encounters of the possession kind. Shutting off the supply of nutrients, including oxygen. Once the baby is born, the mouth is cleared of fluids and the lungs can begin to expand and fill with air. If the umbilical cord is cut before this process is complete, there is a period of time when no oxygen is coming in. To the newborn, this feels like suffocation. 26. The client is guided to trace this feeling back to its source. Often a prior lifetime is discovered when death was caused by suffocation, hanging, or strangulation. Past life therapy on the death experience will ease the discomfort with tight things around the neck. Exploring the birth experience in this way will often ease the problem of shallow breathing. It is a basic principle of Freudian psychodynamic theory that reliving is relieving. Bringing the subconscious memories into the conscious level may ease or resolve the problem or conflict, though many issues require further processing for complete resolution. This is the essence of regression therapy. Jeff relationship patterns can be established during the birth experience. Jeff described his love life as a series of very brief affairs, usually with large-breasted blonde women. In session, he discovered that he had been taken from mother immediately after birth, which interrupted the essential mother-infant bonding. He was wrapped in a blanket and held and regularly cared for by a large, buxom, loving, blonde-haired nurse. She smelled good, she felt good, she gave him nurturance and nourishment. His mother was distant and unable to care for him because she was recovering from the ordeal of giving birth to her son. From that moment forward, he was unconsciously looking for the big, blonde nurse. Recovery of lost soul fragments. Recovery of soul fragmentation, RSF, is a clinical approach to soul retrieval, a traditional shamanic method of healing. In indigenous cultures, sickness was thought to be caused by loss of one's soul, or part of it. The shaman journeyed into the underworld, the upper world, or wherever the soul fragment had gone, to retrieve the soul and return it to the sick person, restoring wholeness and health. 27. This is more than a primitive notion. In clinical practice, we find that the condition of dissociation or fragmentation of consciousness is very common with people. Depending on the severity of the trauma which leads to the dissociation, the results can range from mood changes to the often debilitating condition of multiple personality disorder, MPD, now called dissociative identity disorder, DID. 28. DID is often the result of childhood sexual abuse. This condition is reflected in our language, indicating an inner awareness of the condition. It was a shattering experience. That guy isn't playing with a full deck. Hello, is anyone home in there? I'm just falling apart. I feel half dead. I left my heart in San Francisco. 25. Savvy. The term recovery of soul fragmentation is used to describe the clinical method of gathering the scattered soul or mind fragments. The healing of the condition is also familiar to the inner mind, the inner knower. It is expressed in such expressions as the following. Pull yourself together. He's a real together guy. I'm getting it together. Most everyone has mixed feelings at times, mood changes, awareness of parts of the personality with different desires, roles, even functions. We often act differently in different circumstances. The overbearing supervisor in the office can be a submissive husband at home. The capable, conscientious, patient and loving mother can be a screaming, demanding, unreasonable customer at a department store sale. These various selves, 29, have been labeled subpersonalities. 30. Many people shift between the many subpersonalities without notice, simply adjusting and conforming to the surrounding circumstances. 31. More obvious changes in personality can stem from some really painful experience. These splits of consciousness can result from a major or minor, real or imagined, emotional or physical trauma. Most of these personality fragments remain with the person, affecting behavior, appetites, and attitudes. There are many therapeutic techniques for treating this condition. Ego state therapy, inner child healing, subpersonality therapy, parts therapy. In clinical practice, we have found that some of these splits or fragments actually separate from the person, much like the out-of-body experience. 32. Each fragment remains connected to the core consciousness in the physical body by a silver thread, a part of the silver cord connecting soul to body. 33. Many clients in altered states can perceive this silver thread connection. In some reported cases of out-of-body experience, people can perceive a cord of light, connecting their physical body with the location of their consciousness. 34. A fragment can be separated from a person and just follow like a balloon on a string. A mind fragment of a living person can be with another living person as an attached entity. A fragment can remain in a location of a trauma or an especially joyous event. The fragment can sometimes be found in some distant location. If a fragmentation occurred in a prior lifetime, the fragment might still be back there/then. Nearly all these fragments can be located and recovered in a therapy session. In the literature on multiple personality, the sufferers, more often women than men, describe splitting away psychically, actually leaving the body during sexual abuse. Combat veterans often sustain severe fragmentation during life-threatening firelights. A serious traffic accident, even a narrowly missed collision, can cause a fragment to separate and move toward the light, assuming it has died. The shock, the emotional impact of the trauma on the psyche, can lead to a fragmentation of the consciousness, the soul essence. Emotional violation can cause fragmentation as quickly as physical pain. A child who trusts a parent or grandparent can be emotionally shattered if that loved 26 close encounters of the possession kind one sexually violates the child. The ability to trust will leave with the fragment. A child or young adolescent can be devastated if a parent dies. There is a lack of understanding and often a feeling of self-blame for the death. The ability to love may be crushed and the fragment will harbor that crippled capacity. The person no longer has the ability to love. When we discover fragmentation, the client is guided to locate the original trauma and recover the lost fragment. We assist in processing the emotional pain to a peaceful resolution, and the soul fragment, or subpersonality, is welcomed back into the body/mind space, like a piece of a jigsaw puzzle fitting into place. As the fragment is recovered and healed of its emotional pain, it will bring back that ability to trust or ability to love, or some other emotion or capacity which was lost along with the fragment, such as creative imagination or playfulness. In this way, the returning fragment always has a gift, for the client, often an essential emotional ability or transpersonal quality such as loyalty, honesty, even clairvoyance or other psychic ability. With the fragment safely home, the client will report a feeling of warmth, peace, and a pleasant new sense of wholeness. Fragmentation presents a wide open door for any passing entity. If there are literally pieces missing from the soul essence of an entity can easily enter and attach. In session, we often discover that this is the vulnerability which first allowed the attachment. Soul fragments are recovered and integrated after releasement of attached entities. This is part of the protection against future intrusion. William James wrote and lectured on multiple personality and spirit possession. These were professionally acceptable subjects for investigation early in this century. In James' day, there was much alarmist writing in psychopathy about degeneration, and he suggested that, if there are devils, if there are supernormal powers, it is through the cracked and fragmented self that they enter. 35. We discover some degree of fragmentation in nearly every client we see in our private counseling practice. Who among us has not suffered at least some minor trauma in life? Fragmentation as the source of illness is an important concept in the native healing traditions. It may prove to be an important thread in the rich tapestry of holistic healing. The chocolate chip cookie eater. One of my own subpersonalities was a chocolate chip cookie eater. When I was about 9 years old, my aunt made me some chocolate chip cookies. The warm, wonderfully fragrant cookies were heaped on a plate sitting on the pull-out breadboard. They smelled great. I reached for a cookie. She slapped my hand. That was a shock. I didn't understand. Again I reached for a cookie. She slapped my hand again. Aha. I got it. No cookies. She had some cockamamie idea that the cookies had to cool before they could be eaten. But my mouth was watering and I wanted one of my cookies now. No way. So I salivated and longed for a cookie while they cooled. That silly little upset. A minor emotional trauma caused a personality split off that affected my cookie 27 savvy eating habits for years to come. Eventually I worked on it in a therapy session. The source of the trauma seemed to be a past life in which I had died of starvation at age 9. The episode with the cookies re-stimulated that greater trauma. The way I attempted to deal with the buried fear of death was to buy freshly baked chocolate chip cookies, a dozen or two at a time. In this life, a very minor trauma, but it exemplifies the condition and the effects of a subpersonality. After that session, my consumption of chocolate chip cookies assumed normal proportions. Past life therapy. Many people reject the idea of looking into a past lifetime for problems as they claim to have enough troubles in the present life. This sounds reasonable. However, in clinical practice, clients discover that present life conflicts and problems often stem from traumatic events in prior lifetimes. Past life memories may come to us in many guises. The déjà vu experience, recurrent dreams, either of a specific location, or of a frightening event, an unexplained, groundless fear, or a crippling phobia. People who fear water, public speaking, or heights, to name just a few common phobias, often uncover the memory of a death by drowning, hanging or burning at the stake before a crowd, or falling from a high place. As these past life traumas are explored and resolved in therapy sessions, the phobias cease to exist for the clients. The process of past life therapy, PLT, is being used effectively by mental health professionals in many countries. 36. Through the emotional feelings and body sensations associated with an identified present life problem, the client is prompted to locate the source or cause or origin of the problem. This usually leads to the discovery of a pain-filled memory and a past lifetime existence. The client, in the personality of the past life character, is guided to resolution of the traumatic episode in the lifetime, and finally through the moment of death. From this point, the newly deceased soul can review the life, easily recall the source of anger, fear, resentment, and any other unresolved conflicts in the lifetime. This after-death experience can be a rich font of healing for the client. The therapist assists the client in resolving any remaining emotional issues, any unfinished business in that life, finally to the point of being willing to forgive the individuals involved in the past life incidents, including one's own self. Self-forgiveness may be the most difficult to accept. With this resolution and healing of past hurts, the client can leave behind the trauma of that lifetime and integrate the lessons of the healed experience into the present life situation. Once the past life character is separated from the physical body and free from any physical constraint or emotional ties with the lifetime, it can move away from the body and the death scene and make the transition fully into the light. This part of the narrative is similar to descriptions of the near-death experience, NDE. 37 during which the being returns from the threshold of the light and rejoins the physical body, the past life personality. In fact, all the past life and potential future life personalities are contained within the soul essence, along with the memories and 28 close encounters of the possession kind life scripts of all lifetimes. The entire panorama of past lives and future lives on this planet and elsewhere is available to the client in an altered state of consciousness. The linear flow of time is an artifact of the physical universe, which a being experiences only while incarnated in physical form. Past and future lives do not seem to be arranged in this linear fashion. 38. Many emotional problems and conflicts are quickly and effectively resolved through PLT, usually in far fewer sessions than with conventional therapy. Many physical ailments are considered to be psychosomatic, and these conditions may begin to diminish or cease altogether. With the knowledge and wisdom gained through past life regression therapy and the power of forgiveness, the unfinished business, the unresolved issues, the emotional residue of past times can be healed. Then a person can live and love more fully in the present moment. There is enormous healing potential in past life therapy. Past life therapy, when performed by a well-trained professional therapist, is a powerful, safe, swift, direct approach to psychotherapy, and the results are often immediate and lasting. The amazing success of past life therapy does not depend on the belief or disbelief of either the therapist or the client. Reincarnation is an age-old philosophical concept, and theoretical reality is a spiritual teaching. Past life therapy is a well-established psychotherapeutic technique that works. Pete and Marion. Pete was a 35-year-old TV producer. He suffered from diabetes, which required a daily intake of 12 units of insulin by injection. This is not a high dosage, but it is significant. Pete had lost the vision in one eye, and was suffering impaired circulation in his legs, which could eventually lead to amputation. Pete's body was literally giving out beneath him. He was awash in helpless anger. The TV show was an interview format, and I had been invited to discuss past life regression therapy. Marion, the hostess, had reluctantly volunteered to undergo an altered state session in preparation for the show. about the only way an interviewer can formulate intelligent questions on a little-known subject like past life therapy is to actually experience a session. Marion chose to explore a disturbing dream which had been recurring 2 or 3 times a week as far back as she could remember. In the dream, she sensed herself looking down on a small, old-fashioned town. She floated along a brick road to the edge of town and that was it. The dream would end. Several times a week, week after week, she would awaken with a feeling of sadness. Not the best way to face life each day. I asked Marion to recall and describe the dream. She related the short segment and I urged her to continue and describe what she experienced next. Surprised that her dream continued, she saw that the brick road extended down to the edge of a small river. The scene ended there. At my suggestion, she started to narrate the dream again. This time, I made a clinical assumption that the dream was a repressed, emotionally laden memory, perhaps from a past lifetime. At the end of her narrative, I directed Marion to 29 Savi locate a time when she was in her body in the town. She immediately recalled an event and began to describe it. The assumption seemed to be valid. Her response could also be the result of my direction. What followed, however, was not the result of any suggestion. She was engaged to be married. She was standing before the smoking ruins of the home of her fiancé and his parents. Feeling desperate and confused, they had all died in the fire. The constable of the small town assumed she was guilty of setting the fire and attempted to take her into custody. She escaped and ran into the woods surrounding the area, where she remained, undetected, for several hours. She heard noises in the brush nearby. 3 highwaymen, as she called them, discovered her, raped her, and slit her throat. She floated above the treetops, separated now from her body and pain-free, yet deeply saddened by the death of her fiancé and very confused. In spirit, time is no barrier to exploration. She could move back and forth and observe, much like fast-forwarding or reversing a videotape. She explored the circumstances of the fire and discovered that her fiancé had set the blaze, planning for his parents to die, counting on their meager wealth as his inheritance. To his horror, he had been trapped in the house, and had died along with them. She was terribly disappointed by his behavior and by her own poor judgment of his character. Her naive infatuation for him quickly vanished. She drifted across her little town, over the brick road, across the flowing river, and began to rise toward an approaching light. This new understanding relieved her confusion and eased her sadness. Marion came out of the altered state feeling somehow unburdened. She had to rush to fix her makeup to be ready for airtime. Pete wanted to explore his diabetes through regression therapy. It was now 11 a.m. and the show was scheduled to begin at noon. I agreed to do the session, even though it would have to be brief. He went right into the experience. Drive. B. How do you feel about what's happening to your body? He began to feel the anger. His eyes closed as he gave vent to his emotions and described his physical sensations. Drive. B. Good. Let those feelings take you back to another time when you felt the same way. Locate the source of the feelings of anger. Recall the origin of those sensations in your body. Let those feelings take you right back. He found himself as an Indian hunting with a bow and arrow. He was stalking a bear. He shot the bear. It was not a fatal shot. The bear turned, chased him, knocked him down, clawed at him, tore his body open, ripping apart the intestines and internal organs, including the pancreas, the organ which malfunctions in the condition of diabetes. As the non-physical body, the etheric body, grows out of the physical body, I said, look at your form now. How does it appear? Pete, it's all ripped open. It's all torn. It's wide open. It's ripped. It's torn. 30 close encounters of the possession kind. He was already rising toward the approaching light. We only had about 15 minutes left before airtime. I directed Pete to fill the torn spaces in the etheric body with light. I suggested that he begin to imagine light coming in from the brightness above him, to just funnel light into every space in his etheric form. This was a good moment to use guided imagery. The etheric body seems to carry the patterns for the future physical body, including the seeds of illness. If it is fully healed at that point, there will be no possibility of that illness in a future incarnation. If it is healed in the past, the physical condition in the present life may improve. The symptoms of illness may ease. Drive. B. Can you see the light coming in? P. Yes, it's pouring in. Drive. B. How does it feel? P. It's wonderful, it's warm. Drive. B. Is it full yet? P. No. Drive. B. Keep pouring it in, which he did for a good 10 minutes. I checked my watch at least twice a minute. We were very close to our time. P. It's full. He said this in a very peaceful voice. Drive. B. How does that feel? P. Wonderful, was his heartfelt reply. The spirit of this Indian rose into the light in that peaceful, healed state. The regression was complete. We had 5 minutes to spare and Pete rushed to make up. An assistant patted my forehead with a powder puff and I was escorted into the studio. When the show began, Miriam offered a few words about hypnotherapy and regression therapy. She shared what she had just experienced. Still a little groggy, she was not her usual cool self when the show began and the audience lit it. Pete did not usually appear on the show. This day, however, he wanted to share his regression experience also. Pete was profoundly aware that something had changed within his body. With awe in his voice he said, I'm going to have to get something to eat. My body is starting to produce insulin. 3 months later I was again invited to appear on the show. A member of the audience asked about regression therapy and dreams. Marion related her regression experience. She had not had a dream since her session. It was simply gone. Pete reported that he only required 1/4 of the amount of insulin he had used prior to his brief session. A year later, he was down to 1/10 of his former dosage. His physician had no explanation, yet he did not negate the results. He did acknowledge that the mind is very powerful, and that these things sometimes happen. Pete was delighted. Sparks of Consciousness Past Life Therapy is based on the philosophy that the human spirit is, in its 31 savi essence, an individual being, an indivisible spark of consciousness, with the complete memory of its experience since extending from Source, God, Goddess, the All That Is. This spark emanated, along with countless other individual beings, from an ineffable Creator Source, the brightest light in the universe of universes. Each particle, or spark of the original totality, is termed a monad. Like the parts of a hologram, each fragment of the whole contains a complete replica of the totality when it was in its perfect state. Every monad is endowed with the urge to return to this perfect state, which keeps it in perpetual motion toward eventual reunion with God. 39 There may be billions of star systems and billions of planets in the universe where these individual sparks of consciousness can exist in some form of life. Some of them seem to move from one planet to another. A small segment of these conscious beings chose the planet Earth as their destination. There seems to be a portal or entryway into the Earth cycle of existence. After coming through this portal, there are great halls of learning where the spirit being prepares for Earth life before moving into the planning stage. In the planning stage just before entering the physical life cycle and connecting with the physical body, a form of spiritual contract is established which involves choosing the circumstances for the coming life. 40 This includes details such as gender, geographical location, parents and family situation including material wealth, general health of the planned physical body, love partners, spouses, children, and opportunities for spiritual growth. Learning forgiveness, goals and life purpose, and balancing past karmic debts. 41 There are several guides or spiritual counselors who assist in planning the life script. Individual beings repeatedly take physical form in a series of lifetimes, or incarnations, each time in their own human body. This is part of the plan, the contract, the life script. One soul, one body. No other being has the right to inhabit the contracted body. When the body falls away in death, the spirit being returns to a specific level of the light, or spirit space, a place of very high consciousness. This place has been called heaven or the light. Throughout the book, the term light will be capitalized when used in this sense. In the light there is a review stage where the being can reflect on the life just passed, assessing the growth, learning, the fulfilled opportunities, the unfinished business, and any newly incurred imbalances or karmic debts. 42 There are also spiritual counselors who assist in this process. From that state, the being moves into the halls of learning and the process is repeated. This is the wheel of life. 43 The process of recycling for human spirits. Exploring the farther reaches of the mind through regression therapy is a fascinating journey. We are not at all limited to life on Earth. Some clients recall going back and forth between this planet and some homeworld they remember as their primary destination after leaving the light of Creator Source. They describe coming here for various reasons, and returning home, or longing to return. 32 Close Encounters of the Possession Kind. Past life recall as extraterrestrial. The therapist's suggestions to recall, or locate, are powerful commands to the subconscious mind. If those levels of mind designated subconscious and unconscious do hold the soul memories of other lives, the space between lives, and existence on other worlds, then these memories are available and easily uncovered through regression therapy in an altered state of consciousness. For the past 16 years we have conducted experiential seminars in past life exploration. The seminar includes several group regressions to locate the source of present-day emotions of anger, fear, sadness, and guilt, to explore one's primary love relationship, to rediscover one's purpose in life, and to understand the perceived separation from God. The instruction for the regression on one's purpose is direct and effective. Recall the first time you chose to come to the planet Earth. After a few moments of silence, the instruction is altered slightly and repeated to prompt remembering from there instead of here. Recall the experience of choosing for the first time to go to the planet called Earth. Over the years, we and other therapists and seminar facilitators who conduct similar regressions have found between 50% and 70% of any group will recall the experience of choosing to come to planet Earth from somewhere else. For those who find such a memory, we guide them in discovering the purpose for coming. It is a profound memory and startling knowledge for most people. 44 Nearly everyone reports the original purpose for coming was to bring light, love, healing, spiritual learning, and awakening of consciousness for the inhabitants of Earth. People describe this place as a very dense, heavy planet, and this heaviness dulls the consciousness and dims the memory. Those who came earlier forgot their true identity and whence they came, and many of the beings among the waves of helpers who came with that same purpose have also forgotten. This era has been called a time of great awakening. Perhaps some of our space brothers have come on that same mission again. Unfortunately, some of the aliens seem to be here to take advantage of the confusion. Most of the time it's difficult to tell them apart. Kathy recalled a lifetime on another world. She described it as returning home for further instructions, before continuing in a long series of Earth lifetimes. She was a teacher and healer, and it was her job to bring that energy to this planet. Sam, a highly intelligent young man, was seriously depressed, even suicidal, and felt like he had lost his direction and purpose in life. In session, he recalled his origins on another planet. He was one of a group of students attending an institution of higher learning there, and the trip to Earth for a human incarnation was nothing more than a field trip for his group. He had lost contact with them and felt alone in his mission. As he touched into the consciousness of his group, he learned that many who had come had also forgotten their mission, had lost sight of their 33 savvy purpose, and more than a few had committed suicide. With this regression, Sam's depression eased. He regained his enthusiasm for following the spiritual path of learning, and I suspect he will go on to fulfill his assignment here on his field trip to Earth. Ted attended our basic SRT training course. As a hypnotherapist, he wanted to expand his knowledge and skills. He volunteered as a demonstration subject. The tale that emerged is not uncommon, yet was quite disturbing to Ted. We discovered an attached at which had been in place for a long time. Not unusual, its stated purpose was to gather data on the human animal in normal Earth life circumstances. Again, a very common situation. What came next was a bit unusual, though we have heard it in other sessions. I directed Ted to locate the origin of the said connection. He was very surprised at what his own subconscious mind and the attached at disclosed. Prior to the present lifetime, the being that is now manifesting as Ted was an associate of the attached at. They knew each other. They were fellow citizens on another planet, in another density. Ted was an at. His past lives were on another planet. This bit of knowledge was hard for him to accept. Yet there it was, coming from his own memory banks. As part of a scientific team in the other place, Ted agreed to come into the Earth cycle as a sort of guinea pig for the experiment. As a human being, He would be a living laboratory for his teammates to study without the hostility or resistance that a native Earth inhabitant might exhibit toward invasive eats. They had followed him to Earth, moved into his physical body when Ted was very young, and had set up their equipment. Whatever the effects, he was used to it since it had been there nearly all his life. Ted chose to release the Ed and get rid of the equipment, the communication and control devices that had been implanted. He did not like what he had discovered about his own past, and he now chose a different course. He literally abandoned the alien project and chose human life. The Eats didn't like it, but they honored his choice. They had always known it was one of the possible outcomes of such an experiment if Ted discovered them. 45 The Nordic Type 1 type of alien being, which has been reported often in recent years, has come to be identified as the Nordic type. Blonde, blue-eyed, kindly and helpful. Apparently these types have been coming to Earth for millennia. Several clients have related past lives in Central America during which they took the role of priest or priestess, seeking to teach and lead the primitive peoples to higher spiritual awareness. They described themselves as tall, blonde, fair-skinned, Nordic in appearance. They remembered the instructions they received periodically from their homeworld, either by direct communication or by traveling there and returning to Earth. They were extraterrestrials who had come to help the people of Earth. Now they stay on as humans. 34 Close encounters of the possession kind. For a time the local citizens listened to the wisdom of these sky people, then finally rebelled and slaughtered the different ones. After the eradication of the influence and guidance, the native chiefs and priests distorted the spiritual teaching and practices. With the failure to understand the priestly rituals and incantations as communications with the homeworld of their former spiritual leaders, the ceremonies became empty rituals to imaginary gods, who did not answer their prayers, did not fulfill their needs. Eventually, the chiefs started the practice of human sacrifice in an attempt to send messengers to the gods with prayers for assistance. Blood sacrifice, the taking of human life in such ritual, was ineffectual, yet it became a common routine for those humans who assumed power in leadership positions. Human sacrifice became an instrument of fear, a way of maintaining control over the people. This was a gross misuse of power and a terrible distortion of the meaning of the rituals and incantations, which were originally a means of communication between the Nordic Eats and their homeworld. When we explore this kind of situation through the far memory of a client who was the victim in such a ritual in a past lifetime, we uncover the DFEs controlling the priests and executioners. This type of human activity always seems to be motivated, controlled, and perpetuated by the dark forces. The anguish of the messenger, about to be victimized, is an energy which can be collected by the DFEs. The energy of fear in the citizens, as well as the bloodlust in the onlookers as the crowds attend the sacrifice, can also be harvested and used as food for the DFEs and their superiors. This mechanism of harvesting energy takes on greater significance as we explore the ET/DFE connection in later chapters. When a client discovers such a disturbing memory, it can be a past life personality, though just as often it is the traumatic death memory of an attached entity. If it is an entity, the remote release of the dark beings from that past scene, and the clearing of the dark energy residue still clinging to the earthbound spirit of the sacrificial victim, will allow this troubled soul to go home to the light. Understanding the mistakes made in that lifetime will lead to freedom. Peace and healing can come at last. When we hear the details of lives as sacrificial victims, it is nearly always the same lament. The ceremony of human sacrifice was for the purpose of appeasing the gods, or for carrying a request for help, a prayer to the gods for much needed assistance, such as rain for the crops, or healing the people from some sort of plague. The one carrying the urgent message might even volunteer for the service out of loving devotion to his people. A liquid potion, always recalled as bitter in taste, was given to the messenger, and soon they would feel a delicious euphoria. Next, a physical numbness and paralysis would set in. Breathing and heartbeat would cease. The spirit would lift out of the physical body, and would begin searching for the gods, eager to deliver the message. What followed was disappointment, disillusionment, and anger. The messenger would search in the lower astral realms, and 35 Savi, the gods, were not to be found there. The message could not be delivered. The mission was meaningless, the loving devotion lost in the nothingness. Such an entity, overwhelmed with frustration, feelings of betrayal, disappointment, and anger, often attached to a living person nearby. If the messenger chosen was a Vestal virgin, the process often included a last-minute sexual encounter with the male priest or priests, usually against the wishes of the sacrificial victim. There was no defense against such violation. Beyond death after the death seen in a past life regression, the newly deceased spirit usually moves toward the light. Here in the Earth cycle, the light is always golden white, warm, and very bright. The description is similar to the accounts of a near-death experience, the NDE, except the spirit is joined by other beings who come to guide the newcomer completely into the light. Only when the newly deceased spirit moves fully into the light is the past life really over. But that is only one possible option for the newly deceased spirit. We will explore some of the other possibilities. 36 Close Encounters of the Possession Kind. CHPTER 3 Spirit Releasement Therapy. Regression therapy has expanded and developed far beyond the process of uncovering repressed childhood memories. Recovery of soul fragmentation is an integral part of the clinical practice of regression therapy. Spirit releasement therapy and past life therapy cannot be separated in clinical sessions. In practice, the therapist trained in past life therapy, PLT, and spirit releasement therapy, SRT, can determine the difference between a past life personality and unattached spirit of a deceased human being. There are specific methods of differentiating between the two, and the treatment is different for the two situations. Other types of attached entities and energies can also be recognized, identified, and released. Spirit attachment. The notion of spirit possession may seem preposterous within the context of contemporary scientific thinking and traditional mental health practice. However, when I began to read the contemporary literature on the subject, I was intrigued and very curious about the possibility that it might be valid in some way. The signs and symptoms of this condition were surfacing in many of my clients. It would have been silly to ignore this phenomenon. In addition, it would have been scientifically and professionally irresponsible to deny the evidence. Ignorance and denial have no place in the search for truth, especially within the scientific method. I continued to observe and record, astounded at what I was uncovering through my clients in altered states. The basic assumption that must be considered in consciousness research is that consciousness is separate from the physical body and therefore it survives death of the body. Traditionally, this consciousness is called the spirit or soul. In my clinical practice, I was exploring the spiritual reality. I devoured the literature on the subject of possession and exorcism. This included the traditional religious texts, the spiritually oriented volumes, some of them channeled, the work which came out of the spiritualist movement, the scholarly works, and some recent books written by fervently religious deliverance ministers. Through the ages, the affliction has been widely acknowledged and accepted by most peoples on Earth. Opinions on the specific details of the condition vary considerably, depending on the philosophic views, scientific and educational background, and religious beliefs of the various authors. I had no preconceived ideas, no limiting belief system to interfere with my project of discovery in the clinical setting. By asking many questions during private sessions with clients, I learned a great deal about this spiritual affliction. The narratives were consistent, intelligent, logical, and in no way did the clients show any signs of psychotic or paranoid delusions. I continued to observe and question, gradually forming a basic hypo-37 saviesis, a clinical model to explain the phenomenon of spirit attachment, and a rational method of treatment. A very few people are apparently immune to such intrusion. However, it seems that nearly everyone, at some time during their lifetime, experiences some kind of interference from discarnate entities or energies. Any number of entities can attach to any part of the physical body, the head, neck and throat, the chest, abdomen, or pelvis, the sexual organs, or the limbs. An entity can attach to any organ, especially if there is a physical weakness or impairment. An organ transplant recipient may gain the heart and soul of the deceased donor. This condition is not uncommon. 46 An entity can be caught in the aura, the energy field surrounding the physical body. 47 The entity can be lodged in one of the chakras, the energy systems of the body, and can affect the organs and behavior associated with that chakra. 48 In one case, a young woman complained that her 6-year-old son had begun making offensive sexual advances toward her. During a remote spirit releasement on her son, conducted through her as the intermediary, we discovered the earthbound soul of an adult male affecting his second chakra. This is the seat of sexual energy. The entity was released and the unwanted behavior ceased. Ideally, after a person dies, the soul rises toward the brightness, the light, the heavenly place. However, humans with big egos have a way of complicating things, and this passage is not always so easy or direct. Fear, anger, sadness, guilt, the need to be right, even curiosity, can often keep the newly deceased soul from moving on in the right direction. The desire for vengeance after a violent and wrongful death may keep the soul bound to the earth plane, focused on this insane desire. Vengeance is a signal, an open invitation to the DFEs. A person who feels guilty because of his behavior during life may fear punishment in the light. A person who has rigid beliefs about life, death, and heaven, might be a bit confused by what is encountered after leaving the physical body. In one case, the spirit of a Baptist preacher was attached to his son. He was, by God, not going to heaven until it was the way he knew it was supposed to be. After a brief education on the spiritual reality, he changed his mind. He bid loving farewell to his son and moved into the light. A victim of fire or worse, atomic explosion, will avoid the light, which is very bright, because of the memory of death connected with a bright light. We have found groups of Japanese school children, souls literally fused together by the blast of the A bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. A young mother who dies may remain with her little children out of duty, love, and guilt at leaving them so young. A jealous, possessive husband might decide to stay with his wife. The grief of family and friends can hold a newly deceased spirit from going on. Olivia, someone who dies hungry for food or in need of drugs, often attaches to an unsuspecting host in order to fulfill that need. Olivia was divorced and living with her mother, and she gained nearly 30 pounds in 1 year. Her father had died at the beginning of the year, unable to recover from surgery for stomach cancer. He was 38. Close encounters of the possession kind being fed by intravenous tube. He died hungry. Her mother sensed his presence for a short while following his death. Then suddenly he seemed to be gone. He had joined his daughter, and that is when she started to overeat. She did not realize the extent of the weight gain until her twin sister visited at Christmas time, still slim and pretty. It was her father's insatiable hunger that drove her to overeat and gain the unnecessary weight. A newly deceased spirit might attach to another living human immediately after its death. This happens regularly in hospitals, especially in the nursery where the newborns are kept. It is similar to a new car buyer going through a dealer's showroom checking out the new models. A newly deceased spirit can remain in a favorite place such as a house, which makes it a haunted house. The soul consciousness of a deceased soldier can remain on duty at an assigned location such as the battlefields of the Civil War or Vietnam, a fort like the Alamo, or a vessel like the battleship Arizona, sunk in Pearl Harbor. If a person dies with an attached entity, there are several things that can happen. If the newly deceased soul is strong enough, it will carry the attached entity or entities to the light. The attached one can break away and either attach to someone else or wait in the gray place, an intermediate stage within the lower astral plane between the earth plane and the light. It will recognize the former host and can reattach in the next incarnation. This can continue for many lifetimes of the host. The newly deceased soul might not be strong enough to go to the light with the entity attached. The soul then becomes earthbound with an attached entity. This is termed a nested entity. This nesting can extend dozens or hundreds of layers deep. In many cases, the nesting within a person began many lifetimes, perhaps centuries before. The nested entities break away, wait in the gray place, and reattach when the person comes into earth life again. We often find that the innermost one is a DFE. This is especially true in most cases of living humans with attached EETs. We discover DFEs nested within the EET. Attachment to any given person may be completely random, even accidental. An attachment can be benevolent in nature, self-serving to fulfill a personal need of the spirit, malevolent in intention, or completely neutral. Some investigators in this field estimate that between 70% and 100% of the population are affected or influenced by one or more discarnate entities at some time in their lives. 49. Our language reflects an inner knowledge of this condition. What got into you? What possessed me to do that? What came over you? I'm not myself today. The popular comedian, Flip Wilson expressed the concept with the comic line, "The devil made me do it." 39 Savvy the Grouch. 162-year-old male client discovered and released an attached female entity who had died of an abdominal infection. She had joined him in the hospital after his surgery for appendicitis at age 6. The physical similarity of abdominal infection was like a magnet for the female spirit. The story within his family was that he had never smiled after his surgery. The woman seemed to be quite grouchy, and that characteristic affected the man's personality from that time forward. The football hero and the demon. One function of the DFEs is to undermine love in any form, any time, any place, in any situation that involves people, loving couples, families, groups of people, or institutions which serve people. Individually, healthy self-love can be equated with self-esteem. Here's what happened to one teenager, a high school football hero. Tommy was plagued with disbelief about his own ability. He suffered terribly low self-esteem. Even though he was an excellent player and a high scorer on the football field, he rejected the claims made by other people regarding his success. With assistance, he discovered an attached DFE. It was the dark entity that had undermined his self-confidence and self-esteem. It also urged him to commit suicide. Tommy died in an auto accident, recklessly and purposely. As a spirit, he was held earthbound by the DFE, and he attached to Bennett, another student. Tommy was discovered in a session with Bennett, a 37-year-old man who had suffered complex epileptic seizures on average once a week for more than a dozen years, often while driving an automobile. His seizures began about age 9 after he fell off a bicycle and hit his head on a cement curb. That's when Tommy attached. The seizures continued for about 7 years, then ceased. The seizures began again when Bennett was in his mid-20s, shortly after his first son was born. Tommy joined Bennett because he had bullied Tommy's little brother on the schoolyard. The motive was revenge. It was not difficult for the DFE to encourage revenge, as the young man was already resentful toward Bennett about the way he had treated his little brother. The DFE was released appropriately. Some work was completed with Tommy on his false beliefs about his skill and success. The DFE had seriously distorted his thinking about himself. He realized his mistaken perceptions and his harmful effect on Bennett. He also lamented his choice of suicide. He apologized to Bennett and gratefully went into the light. 8 months after the releasement procedure, Bennett had experienced only 3 seizures. For him, this was nothing short of a miracle. The business consultant and the alien Paul was a business consultant, and he was quite successful. Strangely, the quality of his consulting advice improved after his near-death experience. During a session, Paul recalled his NDE after surgery in a hospital. He was aware of moving far away from his body, then moving slowly back in. At home after his release from 40 close encounters of the possession kind in the hospital, he often awoke about 4 a.m., his mind very active, with ideas streaming in. This idea stream pertained to his clients, and the information was brilliant. Paul recalled his NDE in detail. As he described moving back toward the body, I guided him in exploring carefully to see if anything else had entered his body during his absence. Startled by what he discovered, he described an energy form which he said looked like Gumby, a clay cartoon figure. As he came fully into his body, the energy form squeezed out into a very thin layer. The energy form claimed, through Paul's voice, to be from another place. It had never been human in its own body here on Earth, and it did not impose human ailments. It had none of the malevolent characteristics of the DFEs. It was an alien who had come to experiment with the mental functioning of this human. It actually offered good ideas for the mundane activity of human endeavors. Paul refused to release the alien. It was good for business. This is always the client's choice. Several months later, Paul phoned to let us know he had decided to release the alien. He realized he did not like his thoughts to be under the control of the alien, even though it helped his consulting business. Dependence on a non-physical being can prove to be an open door to spirit attachment by more destructive spirits. Possession and exorcism. The term spirit possession suggests total takeover of a living human by a non-physical entity of some kind, which rarely happens. In dealing with clients, I came to understand the condition of spirit interference or spirit attachment rather than possession. Spirit attachment implies connection, clinging, holding, a parasitic invasion of the host, and this is a much more accurate description of the condition. Historically, the task of eliminating the intruding spirits has been assigned to the shaman, holy man, healer, or priest of both civilized and indigenous populations. The older terms, exorcism, depossession, disobsession, casting out, and deliverance, indicate little or no concern or compassion for the attached entity, which is also a God-created being, even if it is a demon. Religious texts assume the preconceived notion of demons, and the classic adversarial approaches to the rituals of exorcism are steeped in superstition and fear. The traditional method of exorcism seems violent and without compassion, developed over a long period of time. The Roman ritual continues as the model of exorcism in the Catholic Church. 50. This concept of exorcism is based on the explicit command and example of Jesus to cast out devils. Though the Church to this day fails to differentiate between demons, the minions of Lucifer, and the earthbound souls of deceased humans, they certainly don't recognize each. Deliverance ministry is a growing part of charismatic Christianity. 51. Casting out demons in the name of Jesus is accomplished in a highly emotionally charged setting, and the results can be dramatic and traumatic. It is a shocking approach to the problem, often very effective, though born of fear and set in a context of preconceived beliefs about the spirit realm. Again, there is no recognition of 41 savvy earthbound human souls or eats. About the middle of the last century, the philosophy of spiritualism 52 was born. The movement was popular in the United States, and it soon spread to Europe with Spiritism. 53. The two primary tenets of the philosophy of spiritualism are 1. Survival of consciousness after physical death. 2. The possibility of communication between living people and the spirits of the dead, through the voice of a medium. A medium is a person with psychic gifts, specifically the ability to allow another consciousness to speak through their voice mechanism. The medium becomes the connecting link, the telephone, between the human facilitator and a disembodied entity. In this way, communication is possible, and earthbound souls can be contacted. Once these troubled souls have a chance to express the anger, grief, demand for justice, hunger for food, drink, or drug, or even give a last message to a loved one, they can be released to their next step of spiritual evolution, the light. This seems to be the first compassionate approach to releasing these confused souls. Countless lost souls were guided home to the light. 54. In Brazil, remote spirit releasement is conducted routinely at the healing centers run by the Medical Spiritist Association of S. Work of Disobsession, as it is called, is conducted by a group of 6 mediums. 4 of the people sit in a circle facing a fifth of the center. A 6th person acts as facilitator. The facilitator calls out for the spirit that is interfering with the identified patient. That spirit incorporates, or enters into, the medium in the center of the circle. Finally, the spirit is expelled and apparently guided to its appropriate destination. This is a generous and compassionate service, performed free of charge. Spirit releasement therapy. The development of the methods of treatment for the condition of spirit attachment covered several years. I coined the term spirit releasement therapy, SRT, to describe the clinical, not ritual, techniques. The entity and the client are released from each other, and the entity is escorted by spirit helpers to its rightful place in the light, wherever that might be. The word release means to set free from restraint, confinement, or servitude, to relieve from something that confines, burdens, or oppresses. It also signifies the relief or deliverance from sorrow, suffering, or trouble, discharge from obligation or responsibility, relinquishment of a right or claim, the act of liberating or freeing, as from restraint. Adding the suffix ment indicates the process of releasing. Each different type of entity must be guided to its appropriate destination. That's what spirit releasement therapy is about: discovering, identifying, and releasing the extras that are just along for the ride. 55. It is a gentle but firm, methodical and logical, rational approach to dealing with spirits or other non-physical beings. It works with EBS, DFEs, and DEETs, or any combination. SRT consists of 6 parts. The first step is to discover any and all. There is 42 close encounters of the possession kind, never just one. Attached entities. There are many clues which assist in the discovery of an attached entity. The second step is identification of the various attached entities. There are many types of discarnate and non-physical energies that can and do attach. Clients have described several types of nearly human spirits, little people, such as trolls, lymphs, gnomes, devas, nature spirits associated with plants which are found in cases of cocaine or marijuana addiction, for example, the damaged souls of victims of genetic experimentation, crystals, shapeless blobs and shadows, thought forms, implants of various kinds and other unidentifiable energies which defy classification. However, most of the attached entities fall into one of three categories. 1. EBS, earthbound souls of deceased humans, including terminated pregnancies and mind fragments of living persons. 2. DFEs, the dark force entities, historically called demons. 3. EATs, extraterrestrials, aliens, or that is, beings from other worlds, dimensions or densities. The third step is dialogue with the entity, through the client's voice, to find out why it's here and what it wants, and to start the specific treatment which will lead it to release willingly from the client. The fourth step is the actual release of the attached entity. Each different type requires a different releasement process and each is taken to a different, specific destination. The fifth step is a guided imagery of light for the client. It is important to metaphorically fill the space left by the departing entities. The sixth step is ongoing therapy for the client. More entities can be found and released in subsequent sessions. Past life therapy is very effective in resolving current life problems. Recovery of lost soul fragments is essential to the client in order to increase the inner strength, the spiritual immune system. Inner child healing 56 is vital to restore balance to the life of the client. It is essential to resolve the conflicts and heal the emotional vulnerability which first allowed the spirit attachment. This may prevent the recurrence of spirit attachments in the future, though there is no absolute preventive measure, no immunity against attaching entities. Identification of entities. The condition of spirit possession or spirit attachment does not involve light beings, angels, spirit guides, guardian angels and other such beings do not become attached and they do not use the energy of the person. They are here to assist, not force any agenda on the human. They are very patient. They do not make decisions for the person nor attempt to control in any way. They are present to assist human beings, not to influence, manipulate, exploit, or violate them. There are several ways of detecting an attached entity and differentiating it from a past life personality or fragment of consciousness. This is the primary question. 43 Savvy Drive. B. Are you part of client's name, or someone else, the past life character, a subpersonality, or an alter personality? And a person with multiple personalities will state immediately that it is definitely a part of the person. An attached human entity will usually tell it the way it is. Once an entity is discovered, this is the next question. Drive. B. Have you ever been alive in your own human body? Have you ever been human in your own physical body, on this planet? The earthbound human spirit will immediately reply in the affirmative. The spirit of the terminated pregnancy is also aware of being human, though it has no experience of being born. The mind fragment of a living person knows its body is living right now. Non-human entities, DFEs, and DEETs, will usually reply with an emphatic no. The body scan is an effective method for discovering attached entities. The client is directed to focus within and by seeing and / or feeling. Scan the body and describe anything present. Drive. B. Focus inward. Notice any shapes or shadows, faces or forms, tightness or tension, pain or other sensation, any emotional holding, any disruption of energy, any holes or vacant places, anything at all, anywhere in the body. Trust what comes and describe right out loud. The client moves deeper into altered state as the focus turns inward. Sensations and images usually come up and are described clearly. The following examples are typical. A pain in my lower back, a tightness in the neck, a black blob in my gut, or a metal band squeezing around my head just above my eyes. The therapist uses the exact words of the client in the questions. The human soul drive. B. If that pain in your lower back wanted to talk, what would it say right now? Drive. B. If that tightness in the neck could speak, what would it say, right out loud? Drive. B. As you focus on that feeling, what image comes? What are you experiencing? The words that come can be descriptions of emotional feelings such as anger or fear. The phrase can be associated with an image or scene of a traumatic incident in this life or another incarnation during which the lower back or neck were wounded. The therapist must be sensitive to whatever information emerges at this time, and not criticize or reject what the client is experiencing, regardless of personally held beliefs. If it is a past life death scene of the client, it is processed to completion and resolution with past life therapy techniques. Any remaining emotion, especially blame and guilt, are resolved as this trauma is released. There is forgiveness, if necessary, and the newly deceased soul in that lifetime is escorted to the light by the beings who normally come to assist. This usually eases or eliminates the physical symptoms in the present body caused by the residual emotional baggage from 44 close encounters of the possession kind the earlier lifetime. If it is the memory of a death trauma imposed by an attached entity, the event is processed only to the point of release for the entity. It is not fair nor appropriate for the client to experience the death pain and the emotional memories of the entity as it goes through the entire process of resolution of all the issues involved. It will have another chance in a future incarnation to resolve its own unfinished business from the earlier existence. What is done in the physical body must be undone in the physical body. Once the entity is willing to let go, it is carefully escorted into the light by another spirit, often a loved and trusted family member or friend. If the tightness in the neck or the pain in the lower back was part of the death memory of an entity, then the trauma the client was carrying and suffering from, both physically and in the memory banks of the subconscious mind, was never his/hers, but imposed by the attached entity. There is no way to know all the cumulative effects on the host's physical and emotional time track through this life and any other since the entity's death and attachment to the host. The interference is incalculable, and this is just one single attachment. We never find just one attached entity. The different kinds of entities will give surprisingly specific and consistent responses to such queries as these. It is usually possible to identify the type of attached entity by the way they answer. Further questions firmly establish the identification. The questions continue. Drive. B. Are you male or female? Usually, the ebb recalls its gender. The terminated pregnancy knows its gender. Drive. B. How old are you? The answer is usually immediate. The ebb will declare its age. The terminated pregnancy has no age in years. This soul does know how many months along it was inside mother. Drive. B. What year is it for you? The ev is fixated in the year of its death. There is no passing of time in spirit. The terminated pregnancy is not aware of any date. Drive. B. What is your name? The ev usually knows its name. The terminated pregnancy has no name. Babies are not named until after the rite of passage of birth. The therapist offers this soul a chance to choose a name for itself. The little one may take a name like White Cloud, or Pink Rose, or Peace. Drive. B. Where were you before you joined __ client's name? The ev will have a clear memory of its own life, its death and the events between that moment and the attachment to the host. The terminated pregnancy will usually describe being in the light. 45 have one terminated pregnancy of course. Most spirits of terminated pregnancies go to the light. Those who don't find the light usually stay with a mother or they might attach to the next fetus when mother becomes pregnant again. It is not unusual for a new baby to be born with an attached spirit of a would-have-been sibling. One female client accompanied and comforted her adult daughter during an abortion. The spirit of the terminated fetus attached to its grandmother. In a span of past lives it was discovered that she was supposed to have been its mother in a former lifetime, and she had aborted it then. It had attempted to return to the family in this manner. In many cases of twins, one fetus may die at some point early in the pregnancy. The fetal tissue is resorbed and all traces of the pregnancy disappear. The spirit of the deceased twin is often discovered with the surviving twin and adamantly claims the body as its own, no matter the age of the survivor. This entity will be angry at the host, defiant toward the therapist, and insistent on staying. This is not an option. With love, they are gently released into the light. Many cases of vanishing twin phenomenon, VTP, have come to light recently. 2 in every 75 people are born as twins. According to medical statistics, Between 75% and 85% of women with early diagnosis of twin pregnancy will only deliver one baby. In most cases of twins discovered after 15 weeks in utero, both fetuses will grow normally and be born. Writer and researcher Carol Dennis, 58, suggests the fetus is too large to resorb after the first trimester. She claims to have heard reports of VTP throughout the gestation period, including one case that occurred just 2 hours prior to delivery. One of the umbilical cords simply comes to an end. There is no valid medical explanation for many of these cases. Dennis, who claims to have a twin on an alien spacecraft, suggests these twins may be separated and removed by ETs in order to study growth and development of these closely related children in the different environments, Earth and spacecraft. There may be other reasons as well. Her work has uncovered some fascinating as well as sinister overtones. In light of the VTP and after having encountered so many cases of spirit attachment after terminated pregnancies, we were better able to understand and assist the human/alien hybrids when we began to discover them as attached entities. Mind fragment of a living person. It is not unusual to find a mind fragment of another living person with a client. It first appears to be an attached entity, yet on further questioning, it turns out to be a fragment which has split away from the body/mind of the other person. It can then go out of body and can attach to another living person. The mind fragment knows the present date, since it is an integral part of someone living in this reality in his/her own human body. It knows its name and gender for the same reason. In its own mind, it has a clear, logical purpose for 46 close encounters of the possession kind being attached. This intrusion is not appropriate, and the mind fragment is sent back to its own body/mind. The mind fragment often turns out to be from a parent of the client, usually the mother, who was very possessive during childhood. A possessive mother can become a possessing mother. 59. A person with an illness can parasite on a healthy person. This is a sort of psychic vampirism. In the practice of witchcrafting black magic, which always includes the DFEs, casting a spell may involve a fragment of the practitioner's consciousness which can be transmitted to the victim. 60. Sister, brother and a session with a young woman revealed an interesting twist. Gwen, the client, was well aware of the presence of Richie, her brother, who had died in an automobile accident some months earlier. The single car accident is often a suicide. 61. Richie acknowledged this was the case. He had chosen to die. She loved him deeply and she consciously welcomed him to join her after his death. A scan of past lives revealed that they had been lovers in other times, with very little explanation of his situation and the effects he had on his beloved sister. Richie expressed his love for Gwen and was ready to release from her and move into the light, but it appeared to be too far away. Since there was no resistance to the release from either of them, this was an indication of some kind of interference. It turned out to be another entity attached to Richie. As he explored within his own being, he discovered the entity, but could not identify it. The questions were addressed to this deeper entity. Drive. B. You, the one inside Richie, inside Gwen, step forward and speak. You, the one interfering with these people, speak up. Gwen. Yes. What do you want? Drive. B. Who are you and what are you doing here? G. I'm their mother. She revealed that she was truly their mother in this lifetime and she had attached to her son when he was about 2 years old, as mother was still living. This was a separated fragment of her consciousness. Her possessive and overpowering love, along with her fear of inadequacy for the job of raising a child, had caused her to fragment and attach to her tiny baby boy. In the classic description of spirit attachment or possession, the living person is possessed by the spirit of a deceased person. Here was the reverse situation, in which a deceased spirit was possessed by a living person. 62. Non-human entities. Some of the entities claim that they have never been alive in their own human bodies. Hostility, arrogance, and disruptive behavior mark the Dark Force entity, or DFE, the true demonic being which has never been human. While there is a hierarchy of Dark Force beings spread across the fabric of time, space, dimension, and the universe of universes, most claim allegiance to the Lucifer energy. They fear punishment for failure and they blindly obey the commands of their superiors. There has been speculation that a demon is a projection of the human shadow. 47. Saving the externalization of the darker side of our personalities, as described by Carl Jung. 63 and 17 years of clinical experience in this field, I have witnessed scant evidence of that correlation. DFEs are not the shadow. When a client discovers these entities, the reaction is often fear and disgust. These do not call themselves demons. They call themselves dark. Demon is a designation assigned by humans. We use the generic term dark force entity to more accurately describe these errant beings. The DFEs can be assisted in their own transformation and released appropriately into their own place in the light. Dark force entities again. From the body scan descriptions, drive. B. If that black blob in your gut had a face, what would it look like? C. Really ugly. Fangs and red eyes. Black and red are the signal colors of the DFEs. The red eyes are a dead giveaway. The demonic entity displays red eyes most of the time. Less often, the eyes may be a menacing black, a fiery orange, a sickly yellow, or an oily, ominous green. These shapeshifters can attempt to impersonate a loved one, a helping angel, even the Christ figure, but the eyes, the windows of the soul, give them away. In these false guises, the DFE can hold the normal color for less than a minute, then the red begins to show. Drive. B. If that black blob in your gut had a sound, what would it be? The black blob will make a sound the client will attempt to mimic, such as a growl, a snarl, or a hiss. This is most likely a DFE. The therapist directs another question, using the specific sound as a descriptor and a name. Drive. B. You, growler, if you could speak, what would you say right out loud? This entity knows it has been discovered. That is grounds for a punishment in the dark realm. The entity is angry, hostile, belligerent, arrogant, fearful, and resentful toward the therapist. There is one typical reply which is nearly a diagnostic certainty by itself. C:F_Q. With this response, we are fairly certain we are dealing with a DFE. One more question can be posed for a final confirmation of identification of a DFE. Drive. B. What color is the light where you come from? C. There is no light. Or, it's just black. This confirms the presence of a DFE. Many clients described a feeling of being blocked in life. The dark being will describe its job assignment as stopping or blocking the client. After the DFE is released, the client no longer feels blocked. The DFEs try to assume ownership of other beings. They are controlled absolutely by their superiors and they claim to have that same control over the person they are plaguing. They are defiant toward the therapist who intends to oust them. C. Go away. I'm not leaving. She's mine. 48 Close encounters of the possession kind diagnosis is clear. This is a dark force entity, a DFE, historically termed demon, of which there are many levels and strengths. The procedure for dealing with DFEs is firm, specific, immediate, and effective. We call on the warrior angels of light to surround and protect everything and everyone in the area where we are working, and the families and loved ones of all of us involved, to stand against the darkness as a bastion of light. The warrior angels of light do not do battle with the DFEs, and the DFEs do not mount a frontal attack on beings of light. We request assistance from a team of very powerful beings called the Rescue Spirits of Light who first bind the DFEs in an inescapable capsule of light. We guide the captured DFE to the discovery of its own spark of light at its center. Every God-created being has that spark, the Monad. Its darkness disappears, its attitude changes totally, and it makes a choice for the light. This is the transformation of a DFE. The Rescue Spirits of Light transport each of these transformed dark beings to its own place in the light. The results are consistent and permanent. 64 Eats and Aliens. Another type of attached entity is non-human and non-demonic, usually a highly intelligent being who claims to be from far away, and only visiting here on some kind of mission. Rarely do they recall having been human in their own physical bodies here on Earth, though some therapists are finding this more often. This is not the spirit of a deceased et, not a DFE, but an alien in its normal form, non-physical. The aliens, or eats, are not DFEs. Demons do not have to travel in spaceships. Again, from the body scan. Drive. B. If you could expand your awareness of that metal band squeezing around your head just above your eyes, what would you perceive? The metal band around the head just above the eyes is almost always an alien device, placed by extraterrestrials for the purpose of monitoring, communicating with, and controlling a human being. The band is not solid, physical metal as we know it, but an etheric, non-physical, energy form that appears metallic to the client in altered state of consciousness. There are many kinds of implants, and this device causes pain when discovered in a session. Drive. B. Expand your awareness. Describe the band. It is usually described as a crude piece of equipment. There may be one or more antenna extending from it. There are often wires or connectors coming off it, going into the body at many different points, and other wires leading up to a craft. The client at this point realizes this is an ET device. Fear and impotent anger often surface. This may lead into a memory of an alien abduction, but the purpose of this particular session is to discover and remove the device and the alien technician's, who are operating it, and anything else involved. The possibility of an abduction experience can be explored in a subsequent session. Once such a contraction is described by the client, we make a tentative 49 savvy assumption that it is an ET device. This question is directed toward the one we assume to be present. In most cases, it responds, Drive. B. To you, the one operating this device, have you been alive in your own human body? C. No. A simple statement. Drive. B. What's the first thing you will say to us? C. Why are you interfering? What do you want? I have my job to do. We are gathering information. The speech is clipped, efficient, and without emotion. They are here on business and they are serious about it. Drive. B. Where are you from? C. Far away. Drive. B. What color is the light in your place far away? The light in their world or universe is always a different color from the golden white light described in the NDE and the past life-death experience in the human realm. The ETs describe their light as green, blue, pink, orange, lemon silver, lavender, deep purple, blue-black, gray, or some other color. Some have been away from home for a long time and don't know how to get back. They are not belligerent or openly hostile as the DFEs are. The replies often show impatience, low tolerance to humans, even a condescending attitude as if toward inferiors. The image arises of a white rat challenging the white-coated light technician during the maze experiments. They usually refuse to speak further. Identification is clear. This series of responses mark this entity as an alien. An ET connection in a demonstration session in an SRT training. Brenda went quickly into an altered state. She felt a slight pressure around her head and discovered a typical metal band. She had no prior experience with ET interference, abduction, nor any memory of lost time. This was a total surprise to her. As we worked with her, the pain increased. We called out to the technician in charge of the device, and this one quickly responded. We called to this one's superior, and firmly requested that we be connected to the highest authority in charge of this operation. This finally led to the Homeworld Council. They were willing to answer our questions. Yes, they knew full well about the devices attached to many humans like this woman. Yes, they were just gathering information, scientific data, and why were we interfering with their activities? These typical responses identified the intruders, and specifically the one with her who was operating the device, as ETs. They were hostile and refused to remove the device. They claimed the right to take over humans at random, without regard for harm or damage to the host/victim of this intrusion. This attitude confirms the influence of DFEs. These were apparently members of an alien civilization controlled by DFEs. We completed the process of discovery and release of the DFEs, from the little dark one attached to and controlling the technician to the high dark being 50 close encounters of the possession kind dominating the Homeworld Council. The attitude of the ETs always changes after this release. The board technician is tired and is ready to go home, and the Homeworld Council is grateful for the release from the tyrannical dictatorship and total bondage they experienced under the Dark Masters. The ETs agreed to remove the devices from the client and from all other humans they had intruded upon in this way. The pain ceased and Brenda was greatly relieved, astonished at what she had discovered and experienced. She realized how they had influenced her, and could feel that certain things within her were very different. Her husband reported later that he would have paid $1,000 to gain this kind of assistance for her had he known it was available. He was delighted with the changes in his wife. Eatson, the college student. A variation on the headband is the metallic skull cap. It extends over the entire head, and comes down to the same level over the eyes as the band. We discovered such a device on a young woman during a remote releasement session requested by her father. Elena was a college student, and during her senior year her behavior had seriously deteriorated. Within the year prior to the session, she had grown rebellious and defiant. She moved away from home with a female friend with different social values than the family, began using alcohol, frequenting student bars, attending rock concerts, and gathering creepy friends. She experienced mood swings, and would act very hostile on the days her parents would pray for her. In this session, the father perceived the skull cap immediately and described two antennae projecting from it. The technician was discovered, but when we focused on the leadership hierarchy, he perceived otherworldly beings, yet in some location on planet Earth. We questioned this, but continued observing. He was seeing a highly technical installation where many of these beings, including humans in military uniforms, seemed to be working. These otherworldly beings were diaphanous yet quasi-physical, highly intelligent, not in the least threatened by our discovery of their presence. 65 And yes, they were on this planet. These beings were conducting some sort of mind control experiments on many humans, with permission by some human authority, and absolutely refused to cease their operations. As the therapist and facilitator of the sessions, I usually make a demand for the client's sovereign right of individual freedom and free will in such cases. Usually it works, sometimes not so well. This being disdainfully agreed to release this one woman from the project, but no one else. This aroused my curiosity and I asked, "Drive, B, how many humans on this planet are you affecting in this way?" The immediate, unmistakable, and ominous reply, "C, ask your government." Father perceived him turning his attention away from us. We were unimportant to him, as was the single female subject he had just discarded from his project. There was an unmistakable feeling of malevolence and personal threat. That 51 savvy was enough. While I do not concur with the conspiracy theorists regarding the government and connection, I believe the intelligence agencies are capable of covert nefarious activities involving citizens. I also believe that psychic abilities and mind control have been explored and developed to a highly practical level. We were not going to explore that situation, no matter our curiosity. This was my personal choice. We turned to the next aspect of the remote session, recovery of soul fragmentation. There was a high degree of fragmentation, or soul loss, at age 20. What caused that? We managed to recover some fragments. This is more effectively accomplished working directly with the client. Even so, we seemed to accomplish a good bit of improvement in the young woman's condition. Her father called soon after the brief remote session. He had begun to see behavior and attitude changes in his daughter, and he was thankful for the session. It is terribly painful to lose a child to anything. It is an unimaginable violation to lose a child to entities such as DFEs and DEETs in some kind of mind control experiment. But to our own government, this is an outrage beyond comprehension. The possibility begs for further investigation and discovery. Remote spirit releasement therapy is normally conducted directly, with the client and the therapist together in the same location. The work can also be done remotely, with the client or target person at a distance, even if they do not know the work is being done for them. We consider the remote work as a sort of prayer for help. The results of the remote releasement work validates not only the clinical framework and techniques of SRT, but also the concept of non-local reality and the connectedness of all consciousness. Remote spirit releasement requires an intermediary, a surrogate to act as the medium, or connecting link, in an altered state of consciousness. It seems that most of us can connect with the minds of other beings, even ourselves in past times and future times. We can connect with others who have left the physical body in death. We can visualize distant locations and perceive accurately what is happening. In more primitive times and indigenous cultures, the shaman would enter an altered state and travel or journey, for various purposes. For example, to check the condition of family members and friends at distant locations, or to locate herds of caribou. 66 in sessions with clients, we routinely conduct remote spirit releasements on children, rebellious teens, alcoholic husbands who would not come for a session, aging parents or other family members who live a distance away, or someone in coma. In a therapy session, we are working on the family system. Whatever affects one member can also affect others. This is an important part of any private session. The results can be seen immediately. The client is directed to visualize or get a sense of the target person. Next, the client connects with the perceived eyes of the other. There is little doubt when that connection is made. Next, we ask for high self permission before proceeding with 52 close encounters of the possession kind, the work on the target person. Clients describe the permission as a smile on the face of the other person, a nod of the head, a pleading call for help, a red neon sign saying yes, or some other definite reply. Rarely is the answer no. If it is, we end the remote session. Once we have permission from high self, the process is the same as with any direct spirit releasement. The client becomes the connecting link, the communication line to the target person, or persons in the case of a spirit releasement on several of the client's family members. It is a courageous act and a very loving gift for the others involved. The non-local connection, the phenomenon of channeling, or allowing another consciousness to speak through the voice, is well documented. 67 remote viewing, or perception of a location or activity at a distant place or time, has been studied and verified in careful experiments. 68 The power of prayer to heal at a distance has been established in a number of studies. 69 This ability to connect might be described as a psychic gift, though most clients can accomplish a remote connection in an altered state. This is described as non-local connection. 70 It can also be considered as evidence of universal oneness, a basic spiritual principle. 71 The connectedness of all things, everywhere and everyone. 72 Remote communication is possible in this way with beings who are backward or forward in time, far distant in space, alive or deceased, and apparently in other dimensions, whatever that means. There seem to be no barriers to such remote viewing and remote communication, and therefore, remote spirit releasement. When a client, in altered state, is recalling and reliving an alien abduction experience, there seems to be a non-local, yet very real, connection with the event itself. We can use the remote techniques and speak with the ET who performs the physical examination or implantation of the communication/monitoring device. Time as it exists on the Earth plane is not the same for the aliens. The dimension we call time seems to be completely malleable for the ETs. I don't pretend to understand this, yet I have observed the success of the techniques of past life therapy, spirit releasement therapy, and remote spirit releasement therapy. Extrapolating from this success, I have come to accept the validity of these distant, non-local connections and trust that something beneficial has been accomplished through the remote work with the aliens and their civilizations. I intuitively know the work leads to the healing of many souls in those distant places, perhaps in other dimensions. 53 Savi Siha PTER 4 UFOs and alien abduction. Our sun is a small star near the outer edge of one arm of the spiral galaxy we call the Milky Way. The nearest stars in the galaxy are Alpha and Proxima Centauri, and it takes a particle, or wave, of light about 4 years to reach us from those stars, traveling at the rate of 186,000 miles per second. Many of the stars we see in the night sky are not stars like our sun but entire galaxies, some much larger than our own, that are so far away they appear as tiny points of light. With all the stars out there, it is almost certain that more than a few have orbiting planets similar to our own solar system. It is inconceivable that life exists nowhere but on the planet Earth. Many people have speculated on the possibility of intelligent life developing somewhere in the universe at some time during the 15 billion years since it began. 73 Scientists estimate our own Earth is about 5 billion years old, and look what has happened here. In 1996, the announcement of a possible life form, though primitive, detected on a rock from the planet Mars, caused a flurry of speculation and excitement among scientists and the general public. The rock was thought to have been ejected millions of years earlier, possibly in a volcanic eruption, thrust beyond Mars' gravity, and eventually caught by Earth's gravity. It was discovered in the Arctic, where a number of other rocks of similar origin have been found. The exploration of Mars and the study of its history is continuing with a series of 10 spacecraft called Mars Pathfinder. Soon after the Pathfinder lands, a six-wheeled rover about the size of a milk crate rolls down a ramp onto the surface of the Red Planet to examine, analyze, and gather soil and rock samples for return to Earth. This project is planned to last into the year 2005. Science fiction writers have given us countless sketches of alien civilizations on distant planets and Earth visitations by those extraterrestrials. In these imaginative tales, aliens approach Earth and her inhabitants for many reasons: to share their advanced technology and knowledge with primitive Earthlings, to conquer and take over our population using high-tech weapons against our crude weapon systems, similar to the way Europeans swept over the Native American populations of this country using firearms against bows and arrows, friendly commercial trading of goods and services, to enslave humans as workers on their planet, to gather humans as food as we do the lower animals of Earth, perhaps to live on Earth as inhabitants because their own homeworld was destroyed. Reports of mysterious flying craft and unearthly beings are part of Earth's history. 74 drawings on stones and in caves portray humanoid figures with a bevel-like shape around the head, similar to our own astronauts and their space helmets. The double star system of Sirius was only discovered in recent years after large telescopes were brought into use. Yet cave drawings in Africa crudely depict 54 close encounters of the possessed such a double star system, and the Dogon people describe accurately where the system is located in the night sky. Their oral history contains accounts of being from that place coming to Earth. 75 In the Bible, the prophet Ezekiel gave a description of what might be interpreted as a high-tech space vehicle and its inhabitants. 76 During his voyage to the New World, Christopher Columbus described a shiny craft flying across the bow of his ship and splashing into the ocean. In modern times, the number of UFO sightings, both from the ground and from aircraft, and reports of the alleged activities of aliens, including animal mutilation and abduction of humans, has increased dramatically. For a time after World War II, the U.S. Air Force investigated UFOs, concluding that, though nearly one-fourth of the sightings remained unexplained, the phenomena of UFOs posed no threat to national security. As of 1969, the Air Force admitted no official interest in the subject. 77 Apparently the military still seems to be very interested in the field. Are UFOs real or imagined? Many apparently physical vehicles, visible to the naked eye in the radar screen, have suddenly disappeared off the screen. What happens to such craft which are present one moment and gone the next? There is evidence such as radar contact, videotaped footage of ostensible and identified flying objects, physical scars on human bodies, but only unfounded reports of saucers or alien bodies. At least such information has not been made public. Crash sites that make the headlines are quickly declared off-limits by law enforcement agencies, military and civilian pilots, and astronauts who report UFOs are ordered, even threatened, into maintaining silence about such encounters. Some authors claim there is a law against contact with alien beings. If so, this would tend to silence those who have had contact. Secrecy reigns. Out of this secrecy grow many rumors, exaggerations of details, and the fear of a government conspiracy to cover up and suppress the information. The federal government has been accused of propagating disinformation, presenting deliberate lies and misleading facts regarding UFO sightings, landings, and recovered alien bodies. So far there are no concrete answers for the public. It is possible that no one on Earth really knows the truth about UFOs and extraterrestrial beings. The government is a convenient scapegoat for the fear and paranoia. Many people have accepted the possibility of a major UFO cover-up by the U.S. government and other governments around the world. 78 The conspiracy theory has grown into a highly charged emotional issue among UFO believers. The eminent Swiss psychiatrist, Carl Jung, addressed the issue of flying saucers. 79 In a letter to the Zurich newspaper, Weltwoche, he stated, "So far only one thing is certain. It is not just a rumor. Something is seen." Jung suggested the possibility of individual or collective hallucination, perhaps as a response to fears created by an apparently insoluble political situation which might at any moment lead to a universal catastrophe. This was written in 1954, at a time when the threat of nuclear devastation was very real. At such times men's eyes turn to heaven for help, and marvelous signs appear from on high, of a threatening or reassuring nature. The unknown objects seen in the sky might actually be Shape 55 Savi by our psychic projections. Though he acknowledged the physical evidence of UFOs as seen in radar blips, Jung focused on the psychic, spiritual, and archetypal dimensions of the phenomenon. The discourse sphere shape, he suggested, was analogous to the mandala, the Sanskrit word for circle, an almost universal symbol of unity, protection, a modern symbol of order, which organizes and embraces the psychic totality. What might Jung speculate about the triangular shape described in more recent sightings? The thinking of Jung regarding archetypal images and psychic projections is echoed by authors Keith Thompson and Jacques Vallée. 81 myths of fairies, elves, trolls, gnomes, angels, and demons abound in the richness of human legend through the millennia. Some contemporary investigators have added UFOs to this mythology. The alien abduction experience. People who report abduction experiences present a remarkably consistent picture of the sequence of events. It seems as though certain patterns have been established and there is some standard operating procedure during alien abductions. This has been reported throughout the world. The abduction experience can be confusing, traumatic, and terribly disruptive in a person's life. If the experiencers choose to talk about it, they are often ridiculed by friends and family, unless other members of the family have also been abducted. Even then, some people would rather not acknowledge the events. In some cases, family members have become estranged from one another following abduction experiences. Most mental health professionals are skeptical about UFOs and alien abduction, and many are downright insulting in their attitude toward experiencers. This shows a deplorable ignorance of the field and an unprofessional lack of compassion for the person who needs help in sorting out and integrating such an unsettling experience. In some cases, an abduction has led to a personal spiritual transformative experience. If a person can get beyond the emotional and physical trauma, there may be a spiritual message or challenge to be gained. 82. Like other emotional and physical trauma and personal invasion, the experience for many people must remain secret, and the stress caused by these events and memories can affect a person for years. Post-traumatic stress disorder follow ING combat and war experience, rape or kidnapping, or alien abduction is a very real condition. That so many people report and describe such experience indicates a frightening reality, so widely disparate from consensus reality that it defies explanation, and we must pay attention with an open mind. If there is a larger reality than the materialistic, mechanistic, reductionist, Newtonian Cartesian model of Western science, it must be explored. It may be that our very survival is at stake, particularly if we are to survive our own crimes and excesses against each other and against the planet. According to some reported abduction cases, people are taken from automobiles. These cases typically begin with a UFO sighting. The person, or persons, 56 close encounters of the possession kind stop the car to get a better look, then realize they cannot move. They become paralyzed and their mind goes blank. When they next become aware of their surroundings, a period of time has passed, typically about 2 hours or more, and they are either sitting in their car at the side of the road, or they are driving on the road at some distance from where the sighting occurred. Some experiencers report seeing smallish people standing near a craft. They go aboard, accompanied by the small beings. Several humans may be involved and they walk or are lifted into the craft. In a few reported cases, the entire automobile and all passengers have been lifted aboard the spacecraft. An abduction can take place at night while a person is sleeping. If there is a partner, that one is switched off during the episode and cannot be awakened. The abduction sometimes begins as a vivid dream and the details may remain hazy or unreal. A person might be awakened by small beings in the bedroom. The aliens seem to come through the window in a bright beam of light, and they have been reported as coming through the ceiling, the walls, or closed doors. There is often a bright light source outside or in the room. The person is floated off the bed, through the wall or closed door or window and upward to the waiting craft. In some cases, two or more members of a family are lifted at the same time. Women who see their children taken at the same time are particularly distressed at their own helplessness. According to some reports, the abduction takes place when a person is involved with a group of people in some outdoor activity. Others in the group may become focused on something else or may be switched off as the target person walks away from the group and discovers a craft and small beings waiting. The abduction may occur when a person is alone in broad daylight, They described a flash of light, a swirling disruption of some kind, then a period of lost time. Again, about 2 hours or more. There is usually amnesia for the time period. In a relaxed and altered state of consciousness in a session, the person can usually recall what happened during the period of lost time. Some investigators use a type of hypnotic regression to explore the memories. 83 Many experiencers recall being lifted onto the ship or craft and led into a brightly lit room. The light emanates from the walls and surfaces in the room. There are no light fixtures as such. They see equipment along the walls and an examining table. With the fear and confusion a person feels at this time, these memories may seem vague. The person may be kept in a waiting room for a time, then escorted by several small beings along a curved hallway or corridor into the brightly lit room. The scene resembles a modern surgery room in a hospital. Clean, sterile, the personnel efficient and impersonal. In this scenario there are typically several small beings doing things with the equipment, and one who carefully undresses the person. The abductee cannot move from the cold metallic table. There is a mental torpor and physical paralysis. The small beings may perform simple physical examination procedures, taking skin, blood, and tissue samples from various parts of the body. In many abduction cases, the experiencer sees a taller being entering the room, obviously someone in 57 Savi charge to whom the smaller beings defer. When this one shows up, the smaller ones often back away from the table, allowing full access to the person being examined. The abductee senses the authority and command position of this taller being. Some people describe this one as the doctor, even before it performs the medical procedures. Some abductees have sensed the smaller beings may be some form of intelligent robot or android rather than living beings. The taller being continues the physical procedures, including the extraction of eggs from females and sperm from males. Many women have been impregnated during an abduction. Within a few months, these women are transported onto the ship again and the growing fetus is removed. These disappearing pregnancies have caused a great deal of emotional trauma to many women. Many UFO investigators have suggested that some kind of breeding program is being conducted by the aliens. Toward the end of the ordeal, either the taller being or the smaller ones may remove or implant a small metallic device, most often in the ear, nose or a sinus cavity. There is speculation that these devices may be for purposes of locating, monitoring, controlling, or some sort of communication. Most abductees are returned to their own beds. Some have been dumped onto open fields or grassy areas outside their homes. They are then floated into their beds, with leaves or grass stuck to their night clothes. It has been reported that some women's nightgowns have been put on backwards. Some people discover new blemishes or scars on their bodies, or blood on sheets and pillows. Nosebleeds are not uncommon after an abduction. Some of these metallic implants have fallen out or been removed by physicians. A few have shown up on X-ray film or on MRI scans in various locations in the head. There is no medical explanation. 84 Some abduction cases involve the entire family and friends as well. Drive. Carla Turner describes the horrors she and her family endured as they discovered the suspected signs and symptoms of typical alien abductions. 85 She also described unpleasant visits to her home by humans in military uniforms, which might suggest an alternative explanation. This was not explained. Carla Turner closes her book with a statement about the very real presence of the aliens, and a plea that if we don't learn the purpose of these alien intrusions, we will remain their helpless victims. Tragically, Drive. Carla Turner died of cancer early in 1996. An intriguing correlation between the UFO abduction and the NDE has emerged. In two books by Raymond Fowler, The Watchers, and The Watchers II, Betty Andreessen Luca vividly describes her abduction experiences. She is led by the aliens through a passageway capped by a great door, for the purpose of meeting the One. The place where the One resides is called home. This is a magnificent experience, and not unlike some descriptions of the NDE. 86 In the second book, Fowler compares the differences and similarities between NDE and UFO abduction. 58 Close encounters of the possession kind in the Omega Project. Ken Ring describes at some length the parallel between UFO abductions and the NDE. Some NDERs return with a detailed account of a typical UFO abduction experience. Ring suggests a third realm, between physical reality and the pure imagination, called the imaginal realm. 87 where such events occur. This realm or level of consciousness seems to be accessible when a person is in an altered state of consciousness.